for traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Did you know that the Defense Department has a program going to access the privacy of young people ages 16 to 25? This database will have personal information about 30 million people to determine if they might be candidates to join the military. Age, sex, do they own a phone? Race, religion, and income are just some of the info on file. This is in direct violation of the Privacy Act established to limit the government's use of such information. We'll take a look at this controversial measure with Nancy Talanian, Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, Wednesday morning at 8 on The Wake Up Call.
AM 920, WGNU is the home of Radio Free St. Louis. If you're outside the metropolitan area, pick us up at WGNU.net.
It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union.
My job is entertaining preschoolers, and it's, well, interesting.
Teach them to swim!
Because kids at this age learn faster than they'll ever learn again.
My eyes
are That's why your child should have a comprehensive eye exam at 6 months, 3 years, and before entering school to be ready for school. Because kids learn their best when they can see their best.
A message from the American Optometric Association.
Are we done yet?
Remember when New Orleans was flooded during Hurricane Katrina? Liz Brown was only one of a few people that asked the question, what happened to the prisoners that were locked away there? Here's the answer she got. And here's the latest update. We're pursuing this issue even further Thursday morning at 8 with Corinne Carey, researcher and lawyer for Human Rights Watch USA. Is it true that they were abandoned in their cells with no food as the floodwaters rose? Or worse? Be here Thursday morning at 8, exclusively on The Wake Up Call.
St. Louis City residents, if you have any information about drugs, gangs, or homicides, call the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department's crime hotline at 241-COPS. That's 241-2677. All calls to the hotline are confidential and non-traceable. Report anonymously and help the St. Louis Police Department help you. The number, once again, is 241-COPS.
Cut your gas costs in half. Team up to share the ride to work in a carpool or vanpool. Thousands of St. Louis area commuters have discovered how ride sharing with Ride Finders can combat the sting of rising gas prices, and you can too. Ride Finders offers an exclusive computerized ride matching service free of charge, so sign up today and begin easing the strain that record gas prices are putting on your wallet. For a list of potential carpool or vanpool partners from Ride Finders free ride matching service, log on to www.ridefinders.org or call toll-free 800-VIP-RIDE.
Tuesday morning at 7, Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, is our special guest on The Wake Up Call. His group has been heavily involved in helping the people of the Gulf Coast put their lives back together in the aftermath of Katrina. But in the process, they've also discovered that the Bush administration is using the disaster as a means to get federal hooks into faith-based programs by offering to reimburse them under the guise of disaster relief, a deliberate circumventing of the Constitution. Other issues you'll need to know about as well will be on the table for discussion with Dr. Welton Gaddy, Tuesday morning at 7 on The Wake Up Call.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Time now for another edition of The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the express written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, talk to the sun. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, talk to the sun.
Time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I remember saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We have so much stuff to talk about this morning. I just want to spend just a week on Bush on the couch because an additional week talking with the author of Bush on the couch. I do. I truly do. Because it is amazing. I mean, you can almost just watch him disintegrate on the air. And I wonder, and feel free to quote me on this. What was the phrase that made George Bush's daddy toast? What was the phrase? What was the phrase that made his presidency toast? Made him a line on late night television. What did he say? Read my lips. No new taxes. Those Bushes will always get a phrase that will come back to kick them in their collective posteriors. I believe that the phrase that's going to kick George Bush's younger posterior, younger than his daddy. We do not torture people. Can you, haven't you seen the pictures? Yes, we do. Haven't you seen the pictures? We don't torture people. What? We don't torture people. Oh, every hour? Is that what you meant to say? Every 15 minutes? Is that what you meant to say? He said that in Panama. That big boy, you know, if I didn't know any better, I'd feel sorry for him. Because the fact of the matter is that there is no rest. There's no rest for the weary. That would be all of us. For the wicked, that would be him. No rest for the wicked. Go to Panama. Nobody cutting him any slack. Argentina. Brasilia. Venezuela. Nobody cutting the boy any slack. If he's not talking about Cindy Sheehan, he's not talking about Karl Rove, he's not talking about Hugo Chavez. Now they're talking to him about torture. And I just want you all to, and I really want to hear, how those of you that defend this mess, I just want to hear this, because I don't understand how you can articulate this with any kind of sanity or without drug inducement. How do you say that this country should not have a policy of no torture? George Bush says that we don't torture people, but he will veto any legislation that says that the CIA can't torture people. We don't torture people, but we've got to leave the door open. What the huh? And you know what's so disingenuous about that? You know what's so disingenuous about that? So what, a law is in place? It didn't stop Karl Rove from breaking it. So what if a law is in place? It doesn't stop Dick Cheney from stepping over it. Since when do laws and rules and regulations slow your game? Why would you be upset with a rule that we have that you're going to break anyway of no torture? I want to hear how anybody without artificial stimulation that takes you from the plane of reality, I want to hear how you can articulate a defense of a policy that says, or defense of your defense of your opposition to our policy of no torture. Defend your opposition. Especially, I hear Republicans are, I don't know, maybe they're starting to, maybe they read the book Bush on the Couch too, and they're like, you know how you stand next to somebody that you know is crazy and everybody else in the room knows is crazy, and you kind of like, your whole body is tensed up like you're ready to bolt. You know, your shoulders are all tight and your neck's all tight, and you want a T-shirt that says, I'm not with stupid. You know, that place where you are, you're standing next to somebody you know ain't right. That's what the Republicans look like. They all have this T-shirt. I'm not with stupid. I am not with stupid. Republicans are coming out saying, you know what? It's crazy. I'm with John McCain, a, by the by, former POW, who says, you know what, we need a policy that says we don't torture people because otherwise our people will be tortured. 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, linear logic. Republicans are some Republicans, I'm telling you, getting out their white T-shirts with their big black letters saying, I'm not with stupid. Don't try to hook me up in that stuff. I'm not with stupid. And if you want to just feel the energy of the place and the time that we're in, y'all. Energy of the place. It's not about the crime. It is about those who stand accused of the crime. This is the energy, and this is where we are. I told y'all 4 years ago. I told y'all 6 years ago. I told y'all, lots of y'all told y'all. It's going to be, I remember sitting in front of my computer on Election Eve 2000. And I got an email from a friend of mine that I hadn't heard from in a long, long time, out of nowhere. Liz, what happens if he wins? And I hand to God, my email back to him, back in the year 2000, on the eve of the presidential election, George Bush versus Al Gore, my email back to him was, lock and load. We're going to war. The world as we know it will cease to exist. Lock and load is what I said. Now let me bring it to Monday, November 7th, 2005. That would be yesterday for those of you that are calendar challenged. Yesterday. The Internal Revenue Service, that would be the IRS, has warned one of Southern California's largest, most liberal churches that it is at risk of losing its tax-exempt status. Why? Because there was an anti-war sermon 2 days before the election. Do you hear me? This is our country. Now I just want just juxtapose if you can. I know it's early. I know it's early in the morning. Some of you are still shaking off the sleep. Some of you all are fighting the urge to get out of bed. Some of you all are already bustling around, moving towards the start of your day. Put these two thoughts in your head. This pastor's church gets a letter from our government about an anti-war speech in a church. What happened to the pastor on TV that said, go kill Hugo Chavez? What happened to him? I'm sorry, y'all, I don't keep up with the news. What happened to him? Did he get a letter from anybody? He get a letter from anybody? Just feel me on where we are. The pastor that said in his church we shouldn't go to war. He gets a note from the IRS, and the pastor on church, on TV who said go kill Hugo Chavez, he still has a hotline to George W. Bush's phone. Rector J. Edwin Bacon of All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena, California, told many congregants during a morning service on Sunday that a guest sermon by the church's former rector, Reverend George F. Regas, on October 31st, 2004. Now, again, for those of us that are calendarly challenged, October 31st, 2004, we were already at war, weren't we? We were already at war, right? His sermon prompted a letter from the IRS. In his sermon, Regas, who from the pulpit had a history of opposing the Vietnam War, from his pulpit had a history of opposing the 1991 Gulf War. Here's what he did in his pulpit. He imagined Jesus, I don't need to go any further. Jesus participating in a political debate with then candidates George W. Bush and John Kerry. Regas said that good people of profound faith could vote for either man, and he didn't tell parishioners whom to support. But he criticized the war in Iraq. He said, and I quote, hold on to your pillows, your blankets, your steering wheel, whatever you're holding right now, hold on. He said, Jesus would have told George Bush, Mr. President, your doctrine of preemptive war is a failed doctrine. Forcibly changing the regime of an enemy that posed no imminent threat has led to disaster. That's what he said. He said Jesus wouldn't have been down with dropping bombs on a country before they did anything to you. He doesn't even say that Jesus is anti-war. And those words don't even say Jesus is anti-war, which I believe is that if there is a Jesus, for those of you that believe in Jesus, if there is, I don't think that Jesus would be pro-war. But eat that aside. This man didn't even say that Jesus is anti-war. He said Jesus would be anti-preemptive strike. And for that, he got a letter from the IRS saying, and I quote, a reasonable belief exists that you may not be tax exempt as a church. The federal tax code prohibits a tax exempt organization, including churches, from intervening in political campaigns and elections. Huh? 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 Well, Jesus, what kind of world are we living in? What kind of world are we living in? My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Good googly moogly. I got more to talk about with this. I ain't done here. Woo, 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 woo. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? Bought you some cashmere.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Eastbound 40 at the last Missouri exit. Bridge maintenance operations still have that ramp closed. You can use 11th Street or 14th Street to get around the construction area. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and Wellsboro, no problems there. Eastbound 44 from Antire all the way to 270 is on the move. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Hanley, look for traffic to be flowing freely. Northbound 270 is slow around Gravois all the way from 44 to Marshall as well. Westbound 270 from Bell Fountain all the way to Washington Elizabeth, no problems to report there. Westbound 70 at 94 is road construction. The left lane is closed. There's no delays at this hour. Eastbound 70 between Bryan Road and Mid Rivers is slow in pockets. Westbound 5570 split from 3rd Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow. Westbound 64 to 5570 merge looks good. Westbound King Bridge traffic between Cleeds Landing, everything is on the move there. Northbound Route 3 ramp onto the Poplar Street Bridge. There it is going well. Riverview at Hall Street, there's a report of an injury accident, and in both directions, Natural Bridge between McKibben and 170, look for paving operations having the left lane closed. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, donate a new unwrapped toy valued at $10 or more to your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealers and get your oil changed for only $9.95, ends December 16th. That's your Toyota dealers. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly sunny today, warmer with a high in the lower 80s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around the lower 60s. Wednesday, cooler, partly sunny with a high only in the upper 60s. The temperatures will be falling into the 60s in the afternoon. Wednesday evening, much colder, partly cloudy with a low only around 40. And then Thursday, mostly sunny, but the high will only be in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 62 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 63. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
With only the indictment of Scooter Libby, has Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald sent a message that it was okay for other White House officials to toss around Valerie Plame's name at will, as long as they didn't mention it to a reporter? Will this investigation stop short of going into territory about the justifications for the war? Join investigative journalist Robert Perry to see if the prosecutor is indeed letting the White House walk. Thursday morning at 7 on The Wake Up Call.
Akbar Electric, commercial, industrial, residential, 3737 North Kings Highway, 382-2568, 382-2568. Any and all electrical installation and rehab, basic service installation, light fixtures, dusk to dawn lighting, motion sensors, no job is too big, no job is too small. 35 years of experience. Akbar Electric. Give them a call, 382-2568. 2568.
This is the sound of an AK-47 being fired at you. This is the sound of a rocket-propelled grenade headed your way. This is the sound of a bullet ricocheting off your helmet. This is the sound of an anti-personnel landmine exploding underneath you. This is the sound of a car bomb exploding less than a block away. And this?
If all these people don't believe George W. Bush would be telling us what you're talking about,
that's the sound of people who have never heard these sounds arguing about something they know absolutely nothing about. Maybe we should start listening to the people who are there. Go to optruth.org to find out how you can really help support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
The Wake Up Call blanket drive is set for Friday, November 18th. Volunteers are needed to man the two collection sites at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, and the lobby of the Congress and Senate building, the home of WGNU, at 265 Union. Blankets to be accepted that morning starting at 6 o'clock. The actual broadcast from Carver House starts at 7. If you can help us help those in need, call the WGNU business office this morning at 454-6660 or email your contact information to revolution@lizbrown.com. All volunteers receive a free second annual blanket drive T-shirt as a thank you. Tuesday morning at 7, Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, is our special guest on the Wake Up Call. His group has been heavily involved in helping the people of the Gulf Coast put their lives back together in the aftermath of Katrina. But in the process, they've also discovered that the Bush administration is using the disaster as a means to get federal hooks into faith-based programs by offering to reimburse them under the guise of disaster relief, a deliberate circumventing of the Constitution. Other issues you'll need to know about as well will be on the table for discussion with Dr. Welton Gaddy, Tuesday morning at 7 on the Wake Up Call. Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Understand, this is for all of my ancestors who were raped, who were killed, and hung because of their plight for freedom and for dignity. They died for me, and they died for you. This is for them, to know that, yes, we are still fired up, and we're still talking about revolution.
Every one of you, my dear brother, when you go home, here's what I want you to do. We must belong to some organization that is working for and in the interest of the uplift and the liberation of our people. Go back. Join the NAACP if you want to. Join the Urban League. part. Join us. Join the Nation of Islam. Join Bush. Join the Congress of Racial Equality. Join SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But we must become a totally organized people. And the only way we can do that is to become a part of some organization that is working for the uplift of our people. We must keep the local organizing committees that made this event possible. We must keep them together. Go back and join the local organizing committee. And then all of us as leaders must stay together.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Yes. I'd like to give thanks and praise to the mighty Father, Yahweh, Yahweh. My name is Carl. I am still seeking for help. I need help. I'm just asking for help. What more could I do? What more could I say? Why does you say the truth and you tell the truth and you ask for help? Why is that I can't get help, Ms. Brown?
Again, if you want to put your number out there, Carl, you can do that.
But how come I can't get to talk to you, Liz?
I've talked to you before, and again, I'm. If you want to put your number out there, I can't solve every problem, Carl. And I don't think it's fair of people to ask me to solve every problem. So if you want to put your phone number out there, please feel free to do that.
Just leave it off there as I did before.
Okay, you're more than welcome. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways. Get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. And I'm just feeling this. Where we are as a society, where we are in this country, where we are, is an astounding place. We have pastors, reverends, or the people, the largest and most liberal church that's out there in California gets a letter from the IRS. What did their pastor say 2 days before the election of 2004? As Archbishop Desmond Tutu was in the audience sitting next to him. What did this pastor say? What did this pastor say? And what has the IRS said? Here's what the pastor said. His sermon, imagine how Jesus would admonish Bush and Kerry if he debated with them. He never urged parishioners to vote for one candidate over the other. He did say that he believes that Jesus would oppose the war in Iraq. Jesus would be saddened by Bush's position on the use and the testing of nuclear weapons, you think? He said that Bush has led us into a war with Iraq as a response to terrorism. Yet I believe Jesus would say to Bush and Kerry, war is itself the most extreme form of terrorism. President Bush, you have not made dramatically clear what have been the human consequences of the war in Iraq. Later in his sermon, he said that he had Jesus confront both Kerry and Bush. I will tell you what I think of war. This is what he's saying that Jesus would say. And he's saying it to both candidates. Oh, wait a minute. I just had a thought. Maybe the IRS and this administration is angry at this pastor for trying to get Jesus elected as opposed to Bush or Kerry. Because this pastor was admonishing both of them because Kerry was, and the reason he lost is because he was pro-war too. He was pro-war too. So who obviously this pastor was pushing Jesus on folks. Good God. Pushing Jesus on folks in the middle of an election. Take away their IRA. They take away their status, nonprofit status. Here's what he said. Yeah, the pastor said, Regas is his name. He had Jesus confront both Kerry and Bush. I will tell you what I think of the war, of your war, to both of them, your war. The sin at the heart of this war against Iraq is your belief that an American life is of more value than an Iraqi life. That an American child is more precious than an Iraqi baby. God loathes war. And then this pastor went on to say, if Jesus debated Bush and Kerry, he would say to them, why is there so little mention about the poor? Y'all? And then Regas went on to say, the religious right has drowned out everyone else. Now the faith of Jesus has become known as pro-rich, pro-war, and pro-American. Dang. Folks need to get to this man's church. I'm not pro-abortion, but pro-choice. There is something vicious and violent about coercing a woman to carry to term an unwanted child. That's what he said from the pulpit. Yowza. Yowza. No wonder. I don't think it had anything to do with. But you know what? I don't think it had anything to do with what he said about Bush and Kerry. Because you know what? Because there were a couple of other issues on the ballot. There were a couple of other issues on the ballot that had to do with abortion. I think that this had more to do with abortion. This is what he said at the end. And I'm just asking because I don't know everything, y'all. Please help me as I struggle through these days. Trying to make sense of the world because I don't know everything. But he said, when you go into the voting booth, take with you all that you know about Jesus, the peacemaker. Take all that Jesus means to you. Then vote your deepest values. Ain't that something? Jesus, the peacemaker. I bet you this administration trying to take him out. Them's fighting words. Them is fighting words to this administration. The peacemaker, what you say? Boom. Okay? Them is fighting words. I understand why you got a letter from the IRS. We're going to take a break. Cussing during your sermon saying the word peace. Woo! I love this song. I love this song. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Oh, one of my favorite people is going to be on in the next hour, Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance. He's so wonderful. Oh, it's going to be such a good interview. Stay with us, folks. Keep your head up, baby. I'll be back.
Keep your head up. This is the day we'll come. And love to the sun. Even when the darkness shall come,
it's real songs. Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Get the zone, AutoZone.
Cooling system failure is the number one cause of engine-related breakdowns. So get to AutoZone and pick up some antifreeze today. If you don't flush and fill your car's cooling system every other year, that old, weak antifreeze won't give your engine the protection it needs. And that could lead to some costly repairs down the road. It's fall car care season, so get to AutoZone, pick up some antifreeze, and make sure your engine is ready for the road ahead.
This hour's World News Update can be heard in its entirety next Tuesday at this time.
Former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter will be our special guest on Mondays at 9 on November 14th. He was in Iraq as an inspector for 7 years and made it very clear before the invasion began that Iraq was not in possession of weapons of mass destruction and that trying to oust Saddam Hussein would be extremely dangerous. He's also on record as saying the president has betrayed the American people by building the Iraqi threat on lies, and he might stoop to any level to do most anything. An exclusive wake-up call interview with Scott Ritter, coming up on the November 14th edition of Mondays at 9.
Since 1977, Home Services, Inc. has helped St. Louis's disabled and elderly residents stay in their own homes longer. From repairing and modifying homes in the area to keeping neighborhoods safe, Home Services, Inc. has been there for thousands. If you or someone you know needs accessibility, safety, or weatherization improvements to their home, call 314-531-9779. If you would like to make a financial contribution to this nonprofit organization, send it to Home Services, Inc., 3755 Forest Park Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri. 63108.
It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union. Tuesday morning at 7, Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, is our special guest on the Wake Up Call. His group has been heavily involved in helping the people of the Gulf Coast put their lives back together in the aftermath of Katrina. But in the process, they've also discovered that the Bush administration is using the disaster as a means to get federal hooks into faith-based programs by offering to reimburse them under the guise of disaster relief, a deliberate circumventing of the Constitution. Other issues you'll need to know about as well will be on the table for discussion with Dr. Welton Gaddy, Tuesday morning at 7 on the Wake Up Call.
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call, 454-0400. That's my number, 454-0400 and 1-877-920-WGNU. And we're broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. You can always email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Please don't forget volunteers. There is a meeting. Volunteers for the Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. There is a meeting. Saturday morning at 10 a.m., 4919 North Union, 4919 North Union, Saturday morning at 10 a.m. You'll get your T-shirts, you'll get your assignments. We need you Saturday morning, 10 a.m., 4919 North Union. We need you there. We need you there, 4919 North Union, Saturday. Volunteers for the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. We need you. We need you. We need you. So, heads up to you all. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
The very top of the morning to you, Dr. Brown.
And the rest of the day to you, Dee.
Thank you so much.
many of those who say they champion Jesus Christ only tried to manipulate his philosophy.
Mm.
Jesus the peacemaker was killed for teaching people what was right. Not much has changed. George the Younger is in lockstep with those who think as he does. After threatening Chavez, Pat Robinson went to the head of the class and stood in lockstep with the Red Cross conclusion. You know, thank you for giving us a platform, Dr. Brown.
Mm-hmm,
I'd like to give Carl some consolation. I want him to keep looking for what he needs.
Mm-hmm.
And if he works hard, it will be revealed to him, because faith without works is dead. Have a good day, doctor.
Take care of yourself, D. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about, much, much, much to do, much, much, much to tend to. We live in a country, we live at a time, we're at a place where our good government is sending out threatening letters to churches that are advocating from their pulpit that God would be against this war. That God would be against this war. And you know what the IRS said? The IRS said that what was preached from the pulpit was a searing indictment of the Bush's administration's policies in Iraq. And it noted that the sermon described, quote, tax cuts as inimical to the values of Jesus. You can't say that. You can't say that? Why can't you say that from a pulpit? Archbishop Desmond Tutu was sitting there. Why can't you say that? And also understand that this is a preacher. They've said that the Reverend George F. Regas. Had opposed the Vietnam War. He had opposed the 1991 Gulf War. And he said, one of the strongest sermons that I've ever given was against Bill Clinton's fraying of the social safety net. And how does our good government respond to this? Telephone calls to the IRS in Washington, D.C. and L.A. were not returned. On a day, understand that, and this is why I think this, what I think this is about. I don't think that this has anything to do with George Bush. I think this has to do with abortion. I think that this is about abortion because this preacher said from the pulpit, the religious right has drowned out everybody else. Now the faith of Jesus has come to be known as pro-rich, pro-war, pro-American. I'm not pro-abortion. But pro-choice. There is something vicious and violent about coercing a woman to carry to term an unwanted child. This is the day that he said that, there was Proposition 73 was on the ballot. Churches throughout California took stands on both sides of Proposition 73, which would bar abortions for minors unless their parents were notified. I'm inclined to believe that that's what this is about. How many churches got letters from the IRS that took positions on Proposition 73? Shouldn't they have? Shouldn't they have? Huh. Huh. You're on the wake-up call, Juanita.
Hi, Liz. How you doing?
I'm outstanding.
I was just finna say what you said. That's what that letter was about.
Mm-hmm.
You know I'm pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And he got that letter, and it's kind of strange. He said Jesus was pro-choice or something.
No, he didn't say that. He said that he was pro-choice. He didn't say that Jesus was one way or another. He said he was.
Okay, he's pro-choice, but he said that they think that the Iraqi baby is less than an American baby.
No,
all babies are precious.
No, what he said was this administration had drawn a line in the sand between the value of an American's child's life over the value of an Iraqi child's life. That's what he said, and that's what this administration has done.
Okay, so he says,
that
I'm against the war.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against all wars,
mm-hmm.
okay? I'm against killing people, killing babies, killing people, anybody.
And you're entitled to that. We only have 20 seconds left here. Do you think that he should have gotten a letter from the IRS based on his position on pro-choice or anti-choice?
I think he should have kept his mouth shut.
No, please. This is America. You're not keeping your mouth shut.
You don't say nothing like that.
My question is, do you think he should have gotten a letter from the IRS because he said that in church?
Yeah.
Shame on you. Shame on you. We're going to take a break, folks. 454-0400 is my phone number. Woo! Scary world people are willing to live in. Scary world! In America! Ah!
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
While the rioting continues here in France, the situation is being watched closely in other European capitals. Monday saw what were believed to be small copycat incidents in Bremen in Germany and in Belgium. But for the most part, there is a belief that France's situation is unique and that there is a small chance only that the violence here will trigger similar riots in other countries.
330 people arrested last night. Was a terror attack foiled? Australian police seem to think so. The BBC's Phil Mercer in Sydney describes the massive raids.
This has been the biggest counter-terrorism operation Australia has ever seen. 400 security agents and police officers, some of them very heavily armed, have been taking part in these early morning raids here in Sydney and further south in Melbourne.
17 terror suspects are under arrest. No word yet on the target. It's election day across America.
Voting time, right? Voting time.
Voting time, indeed. Important elections from coast to coast.
Come on down to East Brunswick.
It's a bare-knuckle fight for the governor's mansion in New Jersey. Another tough governor's race in Virginia.
You allow me to be mayor.
Big city mayor's races in New York, Detroit, Atlanta, Houston, to name a few. And in California.
Do change a chance.
Governor Schwarzenegger on the phone, pushing for votes on ballot proposals that would give him more power to cut budgets and more clout over state workers' unions. Seven states in all have issues on the ballot today. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
In Mississippi, children talk about Hurricane Katrina on their first day back to school since the storm hit.
You had to draw what the hurricane looked like and what you would bring. Say it and lose it.
The kids are being taught in portable classrooms. This is ABC News.
John here. I'm running late. Construction at the tunnel.
The road to your business meeting is filled with obstacles.
Me again. I'm stuck on second. Nice parade.
Why not web conference with Microsoft Office Live Meeting and have productive meetings without leaving the office? Present to clients around the globe, collaborate in real time, even get instant feedback by taking a live poll. Try it free for 14 days at Microsoft.com/getlive. That's Microsoft.com/getlive or call 1-877-MEET-WEB today.
It's going to be a while.
My name is Sarah, and when I was about 17, I started Fry Farms. I sold our first load of pumpkins to a local Walmart. And one by one, my brothers came home from college to join me in the business. 10 years later, we're selling millions of cantaloupes, watermelons, and pumpkins that can be found in Walmart stores across the nation. Walmart appreciated the quality of the local produce, and the rural communities have thrived because of our business with Walmart. It makes me feel great. I love it.
In Texas, voters will decide today whether to write a ban on same-sex marriage into the state's constitution. Just in time for Christmas, a DVD collection for fans of 80s blockbusters like 16 Candles.
The Breakfast Club, probably the most memorable of the so-called Brat Pack films, starred Molly Ringwald, Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson, and Ali Sheedy.
Look, I'm not going to discuss my private life with total strangers.
She's a tease.
I don't do anything.
That's why.
I asked Sheedy if it bothers her to be so identified with a Brat Pack.
On the one hand, I feel sort of nostalgic about it because those were my best friends and it was a great time in my life. If I'm not working for a while and people keep asking me about it, I feel like I'm stuck back in that and I can't get out.
The Brat Pack collection also includes a bonus music CD. Bill Deal, ABC News.
Why do kids start smoking? A new study finds nearly 40% of U.S. teens give cigarettes a try after seeing someone do it in a movie. This is ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, authorities have released the names of the four victims of a deadly single-car accident yesterday in Centerville. The driver of the car has been identified as 25-year-old Dexter Byrd of East St. Louis. Byrd and three passengers, 22-year-old Arian Lang and 22-year-old Shasta Thomas of East St. Louis and 23-year-old Tony Hill of Cahokia, were pronounced dead at the scene. Police believe excessive speed may have factored into the crash early yesterday morning at Robert L. Price Road and Pocket Road. The car left the roadway and crashed through some trees and into a ravine. St. Louis voters will have a very important issue to decide when they head to the polls today. Ed Martin, the chairman of the St. Louis City Board of Elections, says if voters approve Proposition 1, it will allow the issuance of $13 million of bonds for street improvements and replacing, improving, and maintaining the city's radio system. Martin says as a private citizen, these improvements are vital, but as head of the city's elections board, all he can do is urge people to come out and vote. Local Habitat for Humanity volunteers are part of the effort to begin rebuilding the lives of hurricane victims on the Gulf Coast. In a 40-hour weekend build, volunteers constructed the interior and exterior frames for 10 houses and then loaded the frames on a barge bound for Louisiana. Kimberly McKinney, the executive director of Habitat for Humanity St. Louis, says the building project for Gulf Coast residents has accomplished more than just building a few new homes.
It has enabled us to have the issue of affordable housing put foremost in people's minds, not just here in St. Louis, not just in the Gulf areas, but nationwide.
The last part of the build was finished yesterday, with portions of it running live on the Today Show on NBC. Construction on the homes will be finished in Louisiana. Finally this hour, the Blues hope to snap a franchise worst 8-game losing streak when they travel to take on the Blue Jackets tomorrow night. The Blues are 2-9-3 and are still looking for their first road win of the season. Columbus is riding a 4-game losing streak of its own and carries a 4-11 record into tomorrow night's matchup. The Blues and Blue Jackets have the two worst records in the NHL. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by McDonald's. Start your day with a warm McGriddle sandwich and a great cup of coffee. I'm loving it. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Westbound 64 before 157 over on the Illinois side, there's an accident involving a tractor trailer. Only one lane is getting by. There's a couple of other accidents off the roadway in that same area and traffic jams all the way back to 50. Westbound 5570 to Poplar Street Bridge is a disabled vehicle. Left lane is blocked on the Illinois end, and traffic is jammed through 64. Westbound 270 between Bell Fountain, look for a disabled vehicle there, and the left lane is blocked. Northbound 55 between Rivas Barracks and Gasconade, everything's on the move. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to 270, expect normal traffic. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs to Earth City Expressway looks good. Eastbound 40 is heavy after Ballast all the way to Lindbergh. Westbound or northbound 270 between Tesson Ferry and 44, it is stop and go, and then slow on either side of Big Bend as well. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road construction. Left lane is closed. No delays at this hour. Eastbound 70 between Bryan Road and Mid Rivers, look for slow traffic in pockets. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason, it is slow. Westbound Kingbridge before the Laclede's Landing, everything is on the move. Northbound Illinois Route 3 from 8th Street onto the ramp to the Poplar Street Bridge. Very heavy volume. Eastbound 64 at 157, there's road construction. Roadway is closed to one lane, and it's backed up all the way to 255 as crews are picking up all the road work signs at this hour. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, donate a new unwrapped toy valued at $10 or more to your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer, and you'll get your oil changed for only $9.95. That ends December 16th. Now let's take a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly sunny today, warmer, high in the lower 80s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s. Wednesday, colder, partly sunny, with a high only in the upper 60s, as the temperatures will fall in the afternoon. On Wednesday evening, much colder, partly cloudy skies, a low around 40, and Thursday, mostly sunny, but the high will only be in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, under cloudy conditions, we have 62 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 62. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate Building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union. The Bush administration claims the economy is wonderful, but only 25% of workers make at least $16 an hour and have health insurance and a pension. A new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research reveals that in the last 25 years, with a workforce better educated and experienced, 75% of workers continue to struggle in jobs that are low-paying and have little or no benefits. Don't miss economist John Schmidt of CERP for Good Economy, Bad Jobs on the award-winning Wake Up Call, Tuesday at 9.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Oh, Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. My long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's toll-free, by the by. Don't forget, we broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. And you can, if you missed an hour of my show, first of all, shame on you. Secondly, go get it at WhiteRoseSociety.org. That's WhiteRoseSociety.org. Go get the hour that you miss, or go get the hour that you want to share with someone else. We have much, much, much business to tend to, much business to tend to. This morning, we are going to be talking with Dr. Welton Gaddy. He's the president of the Interfaith Alliance. He's joining us from New York City this morning to talk about what's going on in New Orleans, the connection with the so-called faith-based policies of this administration, and how people in New Orleans are being affected. Dr. Gaddy, good morning.
Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think I call in your show so I can be inspired rather than make a contribution.
Well, I am so excited to have you here again, Dr. Gaddy. But can I just talk about something else really quick, because I'd really want to get your thoughts on
sure.
this. Early in the first hour this morning, I was talking about a story that just came out yesterday that happened in All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena. Have you heard about this?
I have.
And I've been losing my mind over this. I've been losing my mind over the fact that a pastor who said that Jesus is a peacemaker and that he would be against a preemptive strike against Iraq, that they would get a letter from the IRS. What does that say about where we are right now?
Well, it says to me that the religious right is flexing its muscle in this nation in an unprecedented way, and that unfortunately many of the leaders, elected leaders of our government in Washington, are fearful of the religious right, or so committed to the religious right that they're letting that happen. It is simply without precedent for the IRS or any other organization of the federal government to tell a congregation in worship that that congregation can't consider the moral issue of war and study the perspective of its holy scriptures on war. I have not read the whole sermon. I've read the parts of it that were controversial, and it was not a political endorsement. That would be wrong, that you can't do a political endorsement in a congregation without reprimand or risk of some IRS changes. This wasn't an endorsement.
Because there was equal criticism handed out to both Kerry and to Bush.
That's exactly right. And so it strikes a note of fear in me that goes right along with some other sources of fear, that we are moving in a direction that is so far from the First Amendment to the Constitution that some of us better heed the words of the people whose voices you used in opening this show and turn this thing around.
And the fact that you're scared by that, I'm scared by that's their intention, isn't it? I mean, their intention is to scare people into compliance and to be fearful of speaking out.
Well, yeah, and that simply can't happen. I mean, we lose our integrity as a democracy. We compromise the integrity of religion itself if that happens. What's odd is, though, that you are not hearing from these same people any alarms about the leading voices on the religious right. And frankly, even the White House at times using religion and religious faith to promote their candidates for public office and to promote their nominee for the Justice of the Supreme Court.
Well, Dr. Gaddy, let's even move away from that for a second. where is the IRS response, or where is the governmental response to Pat Robertson advocating for the murder of Hugo Chavez?
Sure, sure. Well, Liz, you probably are aware of this. There is a bill that has been in Congress, I know, for the last three sessions, and it's been reintroduced again this time, sponsored by Republican Congressman Walter Jones from North Carolina. And the bill last time around had almost 200 endorsers. The bill says that it would change IRS regulations to allow houses of worship to endorse candidates for public office and to support them with the resources of their congregation without losing their tax-free IRS status.
And over 200 people have signed on to that.
Members
of Congress.
Yeah, members of Congress. So, what that says to you is, if you couple that with the Pasadena story, you can see very clearly where they're wanting to go. Because I happened to testify before the congressional committee that did hearings on that bill 2 years ago, and among the people supporting the bill were the evangelist D. James Kennedy from Coral Ridge Ministries in Coral Ridge, Florida. And Dr. Kennedy said that the reason we need this bill is that the government will no longer allow congregations to discuss moral issues in the pulpit. And I told him, I said, Dr. Kennedy, you must be living in a different universe than me, because if congregations don't have the right to discuss moral issues, what in the world are they doing in business anyway?
Why are they a congregation and why are they a church?
Now then, here we've got this clear case from Pasadena that in which the government is saying they can't discuss a moral issue. And I simply have to think that there's some tie between that and people pushing this other piece of legislation.
Well, one of the things that I noticed when I was reading the article, Dr. Gatti, is that one of the things that Pastor Regas said also was, I am not pro-abortion, but pro-choice. There is
right.
Something vicious and violent about coercing a woman to carry to term an unwanted child.
Right.
I think that has something to do with this, too, because Proposition 73 was on the ballot
Sure. Anyway. But what is the difference in that pastor taking that stance and other pastors taking the stance called pro-life?
Exactly.
You can't have it one way and not have it both ways. If we're going to have a national debate about the morality of abortion, then everybody gets to join that debate, or we're not who we say we are as a nation.
I had a caller call in last hour that it was terrifying to hear someone say this out of their mouth, but she said because she is pro-life, she believes that the government should go after, through the IRS, through a church that advocates the other side of that issue.
And that's
terrifying.
I guess I understand passions running that high. What I don't understand is why that person values a democracy, because what they're talking about is not a democratic form of government.
Mm. Well, let's move to New Orleans. Let's move to New Orleans. You've been down there. You have a personal connection with New Orleans.
Yes, I actually pastor a church in Monroe, Louisiana, which is northeast Louisiana, a ways from New Orleans. But we've been dealing with several thousand evacuees there. But we took, as president of the Interfaith Alliance, took a delegation of interreligious leaders, about 20 of them, for a visit to the region. And we went specifically to see how money for relief is flowing, if it's flowing, and whether or not government agencies are using this as an opportunity to fund religious ministries in a way that jeopardizes the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Are we hearing the story? Is this story?
You're not hearing the story, and you're not hearing two or three different aspects of it. What we found, Liz, were was the fact that relief work in that area would be hurting even worse than it is if it were not for houses of worship and other religious organizations jumping in to pick up the responsibility of relief and to fund it with their own resources. Now, I'm not putting that down. That's what religious organizations ought to do. But what we're hearing, and frankly, as you said in your introduction, we wanted to see whether this has been an opportunity to try and advance the so-called faith-based initiative. Frankly, there has been a lot of talk about faith-based initiative money going into this relief effort. What we found was there is no money flowing.
Mm-hmm.
The congregations that are doing this work, with possibly one exception, there is one fairly large mega church. I think it's an African American church to which the president has gone two or three times for speeches and for photo ops.
After Katrina or prior to Katrina?
Well, both.
Okay.
Both. And there has been some federal money given to that congregation. But the places that we visited have not been on the photo op tour. They've just been hard-working ministers, rabbis, and they are doing the work, and they're going deeper and deeper in debt.
Isn't one of the larger stories, Dr. Gaddy, all of the little towns around New Orleans that have taken in, as you've described, the evacuees?
Sure.
Isn't that the big story that's not being told?
Yeah, we have, for example, Monroe has, we've had up to 8,500 evacuees.
Mm. And how big is Monroe? Describe it for us.
Yeah, it's about 60,000, 50 to 60,000. And what happens, Liz, and this is happening all over Louisiana, when you bring that many new people into a community, it begins to change the complexion of that community, both in terms of public services, of jobs available, the whole range of what it means to live somewhere. And what's happening is...
And it's also, and if we describe the population accurately, the evacuee population, these are not people that are willingly coming to this town. These are people that are in shell shock, that are victims of a horrific life experience. So they're bringing that energy with them when they come to this place that they don't want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you probably have seen on TV the shots at some time of these trailer cities or trailer parks,
mm-hmm,
that FEMA is establishing. It's very interesting about them. Many people in Louisiana are calling those FEMA ghettos.
Mm.
The reason for that is that they tend to be located on state-owned land, which often is next to a prison.
Mm.
And it is outside the main traffic flow of a community. For example, we went to one in Baton Rouge, the first one to be established there. It is literally a field of dust. And I'm talking about dust 2 or 3 inches deep, in which there's no escape from that. The trailers are located too far out of town to allow the inhabitants to get to an employment place, to interview for a job, or to get the basic social services they need.
It's not like they drove there in their cars, the evacuees.
No, they were brought there.
Exactly.
They were brought there in buses. And I will never forget that going into we did some hearings with evacuees, and there was a young woman, I'd say maybe 28, 29 years old. She said, "You ask me what I need." And it was a long pause. She said, "What about some toenail clippers? What about some hair rollers? And then after a pause, she looked at us and she said, "Can you imagine what it means to have nothing? To have nothing." Now, the other side of this story, which if it doesn't make you angry, should, is in talking with the officials in Baton Rouge. What we learned was that a day or two after the hurricane hit, FEMA said, "Give us a budget so that we can get you a check so that you can, as Baton Rouge City Government, you can begin to distribute services." They don't have that check to this day.
Huh?
The mayor of Baton Rouge said they still don't have that FEMA check.
And I've read stories of FEMA billing New Orleans for things that they have done, that New Orleans owes them money.
Well, that's true. Yes. And also, I'm very sad to say what I'm about to say, but FEMA turned those checks they had initially into a kind of Christmas party. And we're just handing them out. Now, they weren't handing them out in the Superdome, and they weren't handing them out to all the people that needed them. But we had in the Monroe paper a documented story in one community of FEMA handing out more relief checks than there are people who live in that community.
Huh?
Yeah. So what I'm saying to you is, the federal government and the state government both have to bear some responsibility on this. They came late. They came incompetently. And they didn't do the basic work. And let me tell you, as a religious leader, when this has been happening, when this has been going on for 3 or 4 days, and then President Bush goes to a microphone in New Orleans and says that he wants to call on all the religious leaders to step forward and help, I said, "Mr. President, we are already there. Where were you?"
And we have to take a quick break. I'm talking to Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance. He's joining us from New York. This is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We have so much more to talk about. Please stay with us.
But now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by GM Goodrich. Westbound 64 before Illinois 157. The right lane is blocked and is involving two tractor trailers. Only the left lane is getting by and traffic jams all the way back to Green Mound. Westbound 5570 between Illinois 111 and the Poplar Street Bridge. Stop and go traffic due to an earlier stall that has been cleared on Route 3 or near Route 3. Eastbound 40 at the last Missouri exit. That ramp is closed. And you can use 11th Street or 14th Street to get around that construction zone. Eastbound 44 between Chrysler all the way into Barrie looks good. Eastbound 70 from Zumbel to Earth City Expressway is moving smoothly this hour. Eastbound 40 is heavy from Ballast to Lindbergh. Northbound 270 from 55 to 44 look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 70 at 94 look for construction there. Left lane is closed. Eastbound 70 between Bryan and 79, you've got slow traffic. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason, it is slow there as well. Westbound 270 at West Florissant, heavy volume going on there. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley is slow. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank all the way onto Laclede's Landing, no problems to report. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the ramp to the Poplar Street Bridge, expect slow traffic this hour. Eastbound 64 at 157, all roadways are reopened after overnight construction and traffic has resumed back to normal. And Windsor Harbor at 6167, look for an accident there. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by GM Goodrich. Let Mr. Goodwrench prepare your vehicle for the change in seasons with a comprehensive vehicle inspection, because who knows what's down the road. Visit GM Goodwrench today. Visit Goodwrench.com for more details or a GM dealer nearest you. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly sunny skies today, warmer with a high in the lower 80s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s. Moving on to Wednesday, colder, partly sunny with a high only in the upper 60s. And then Thursday, look for a mostly sunny sky, but the high will only be in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 62 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Remember when New Orleans was flooded during Hurricane Katrina? Liz Brown was only one of a few people that asked the question, what happened to the prisoners that were locked away there? Here's the answer she got. And here's the latest update. We're pursuing this issue even further Thursday morning at 8 with Corinne Carey, researcher and lawyer for Human Rights Watch USA. Is it true that they were abandoned in their cells with no food as the floodwaters rose? Or worse? Be here Thursday morning at 8, exclusively on The Wake Up Call. Spring rains, summertime heat. They can take a toll on your roof. But not to worry, call Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127. Person Roofing now offers a GAF factory warranty up to 10 years on any modified rubber roof, and that includes labor and material. GAF is the largest maker of roofing material in the country and stands behind its product 100%. Finance your new roof with Visa or MasterCard. Free estimates. Call Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter will be our special guest on Mondays at 9 on November 14th. He was in Iraq as an inspector for 7 years and made it very clear before the invasion began that Iraq was not in possession of weapons of mass destruction and that trying to oust Saddam Hussein would be extremely dangerous. He's also on record as saying the president has betrayed the American people by building the Iraqi threat on lies, and he might stoop to any level to do most anything. An exclusive wake-up call interview with Scott Ritter, coming up on the November 14th edition of Mondays at 9.
Good morning, this is Liz Brown, and I just want to remind you that our second annual blanket drive is coming up on the 18th and 19th of November. We will have a meeting this Saturday at 10 a.m. at 4919 North Union for all of our blanket drive volunteers. You'll get your t-shirts, you'll get your assignments. Those of you that have not called in to volunteer, that's okay. Come on. Saturday morning, this Saturday, this coming Saturday at 10 a.m. at 4919 North Union. We need you volunteers. We need you to make this second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive another success. I'm looking forward to seeing you this Saturday, 10 a.m. at 4919 North Union for the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. See you then.
The Bush administration claims the economy is wonderful, but only 25% of workers make at least $16 an hour and have health insurance and a pension. A new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research reveals that in the last 25 years, with a workforce better educated and experienced, 75% of workers continue to struggle in jobs that are low-paying and have little or no benefits. Don't miss economist John Schmidt of CERP for Good Economy, Bad Jobs on the award-winning Wake Up Call, Tuesday at 9.
Around the world and behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Whoa. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Dr. Welton Gaddy. He's the president of the Interfaith Alliance, and he's joining us from New York. Dr. Gaddy, welcome back.
Thank you, ma'am.
I want to continue to talk about what is happening in New Orleans, and as we see the federal government try and put into place policies and practices that they've kind of been unsuccessful in doing. I see that with the charter schools. Apparently,
right.
The school district is gone in New Orleans, and even the governor is asking for people to start up these charter schools.
That's correct. And if you, I mean, that's one dimension of the educational picture. The other dimension is that the White House, in its plan for relief for educational institutions, in the fine print, by the way, of the bill, is wanting to provide vouchers of $7,500 each for students to allow students to enroll in private parochial schools funded by taxpayers' money. They also are asking in the relief efforts for a pass that would allow government agencies to provide direct federal funding to houses of worship and to other religious organizations without any kind of protection of a 501c3 foundation or anything like that.
What do you mean, direct money coming to a church?
Yes, that's correct.
For what reason?
Well,
ostensibly
for the reason of supporting relief services. But now here's the catch, Liz, two parts of it. One is, I've already said to you that according to the religious leaders on the ground, no money's flowing. So that's a kind of a shell game. The second thing is, though, that if they can get that piece of legislation passed as an emergency measure, then they have their foot in the door to advance the faith-based initiative, which in 5 years the president has never been able to get a Republican Congress to pass because there are so many fears of this being in direct violation of the No Establishment Clause of the Constitution. So it's an effort to use a time of crisis to legislate matters that in normal times both the public and members of Congress have said are inappropriate pieces of legislation.
You were down in New Orleans for how long, Dr. Gaddy?
Well, I mean, we were there. This delegation was there 2 days. I have members of our congregation in Monroe that are there regularly, and many of the evacuees with whom we've dealt are evacuees from New Orleans.
What was the most shocking thing that you discovered when you were there?
I think the tardiness and the ineptness of the people who supposedly are trained to provide services in a time of crisis. That's one. Two, and this I don't have any special insight into that everybody else that watches television or listens to the radio would not have, but the shocking evidence of blatant, raw, ugly kind of racism that has been just beneath the surface for all who know the area, but in a time of crisis was clearly on top of the surface.
The people that are the evacuees into Monroe, let's talk about the racial component of just the city of Monroe. What does it look like racially?
I think it's probably, this is a guess because I don't know that figure exactly. I would say it's probably 80-20 African American.
So the bubbling under the surface racism that you're talking about, you were seeing it from what perspective?
From the perspective of who gets first call help, who gets immediate assistance in relocation, who ends up in the trailer parks rather than in some other kind of residence. And I listened, and I guess it was a week ago. I did some testimony before the Council on Civil Rights, and doing testimony that same morning was a young lady from Mississippi. And by the way, Mississippi, as you well know, has fared much better than Louisiana in terms of the immediacy of response and the flow of federal funds. And people on the ground, both in Mississippi and Louisiana, attribute that to the fact that that there is homogeneity in their political affiliations, where in Louisiana there's diversity in political affiliations.
Does it have something to do with Hallie Barber too?
Of course it does. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's been in the media that Governor Blanco in Louisiana had a great deal of trouble getting the White House to take her telephone calls, especially to the executive office. And when they asked Hallie Barber if he had had the same problems with his calls, he said no, that the president had called him four times before he ever called. Now, if what this lady was saying in Mississippi is, if you go to one of the hardest hit places on the Gulf, which was Biloxi and East Biloxi, it's only been in recent days that East Biloxi got a FEMA office. The FEMA office was put in Biloxi, which had a preponderance both of wealth and of Caucasian people. The hardest hit was East Biloxi, and East Biloxi didn't receive attention for 2 weeks at all. So, I mean, you put that together, that didn't happen by accident.
We're going to take another break. I'm talking to Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance. He's joining us from New York. This is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We'll be back after this.
It's a burden place I've been. Make me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. You know it's hot. Don't forget what you got. Looking back.
World News Update can be heard in its entirety at the same time next Tuesday at this time.
November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer death, killing more than breast, prostate, colon, and skin cancer combined. Early detection of lung cancer when it's most treatable is key to survival. New screening methods such as CAT scans are being used in clinical trials. Learn your risk and the symptoms of lung cancer. Smoking is the major risk, but you can develop lung cancer even if you don't smoke. Coughing, wheezing, and fatigue are just a few of the symptoms that are often confused with less serious conditions. Treatment may include surgery, radiation treatments, chemotherapy, or one of several interventional radiology procedures. Discuss treatment options with your doctor. For more information on lung cancer risk, symptoms, detection, and treatment, visit www.radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder from the Radiological Society of North America.
The Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is set for Friday, November 18th. Volunteers are needed to man the two collection sites at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, and the lobby of the Congress and Senate Building, the home of WGNU, at 265 Union. Blankets to be accepted that morning starting at 6 o'clock. The actual broadcast from Carver House starts at 7. If you can help us help those in need, call the WGNU business office this morning at 454-6660 or email your contact information to revolution@lizbrown.com. All volunteers receive a free second annual blanket drive t-shirt as a thank you. The Bush administration claims the economy is wonderful, but only 25% of workers make at least $16 an hour and have health insurance and a pension. A new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research reveals that in the last 25 years, with a workforce better educated and experienced, 75% of workers continue to struggle in jobs that are low-paying and have little or no benefits. Don't miss economist John Schmidt of CERP for Good Economy, Bad Jobs on the award-winning Wake Up Call, Tuesday at 9. Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Yes, indeed. We need some help down here. This is Liz Brown. This morning I am talking to Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, joining us from New York. Dr. Gaddy,
yep.
I've been looking over your testimony that you gave before the Subcommittee on Criminal Justice and Human Resources in June of this year about the
Faith-based
initiative.
Yes, ma'am.
Talk to us about some of the major concerns that you have with this, and talk to us about where it stands.
Well, the reason that that subcommittee did a hearing, the piece of legislation in question is a piece of legislation which would make the White House Office on Faith-Based and Community Initiatives an institution of the White House in perpetuity, even after this particular president is out of office. Now, according to the chair of the subcommittee, that the reason they're doing that is because Congress can't get a handle on the control of the faith-based initiative because the president has done that by executive order and is distributing money through cabinet positions over which they have no supervision. Now, the significant thing about that hearing was that the former deputy director of the White House Office on Faith-Based Initiatives said that it wasn't working, that the president had never given them the money that was promised to go into that office. Second, that it was a politicized office, and by that he meant that the grants, the few grants that did go out of that office, went to politically sensitive areas in which contribution from the administration would be beneficial in the election. He said one of the most excited moments that he saw in support for the faith-based office in the White House at large was when they did those regional meetings to tell people how to get this money, which really isn't there, but to tell them how to get the money, and they scheduled the meetings in swing vote areas just prior to the 2004 elections. Any time, Liz, that a house of worship or a religious organization in effect becomes a contract employee of the federal government, you're in trouble, because that means, and I don't know any exception to this, where federal money flows, federal regulations flow. And when you have the federal government regulating a house of worship, you have a violation of the Constitution, and you have a situation that's bad for democracy and bad for religion.
And scary as heck.
It is. It is. And I mean, you can imagine that if to go all the way back to the to the top of this hour and what we were talking about, if you've got right now the IRS warning a congregation that it shouldn't be talking about the morality of war.
Jesus as a peacemaker.
For fear of that violating what a congregation ought to do, you let the federal government put enough money in there to actually control the congregation, and you've got a glimpse of the situation that would be in place.
And when you talk to folks out there, when you talk to fellow members of the Interfaith Alliance, are there congregations asking for this? Are there any people out here that are asking for this?
Liz, there are. That's a very important question, and the answer to it's very important. There are people in this nation who are doing extraordinarily good work, which is hard work. They're seeing people who are hungry. They're seeing people who need jobs. And the people who run those offices, let's say in a storefront organization in an inner city of St. Louis, the people that are doing that work see needs that are so great that they just want money to help. And frankly, they don't care where it comes from because they're not looking at the long haul. They're looking at the immediate. If I can get more money for my program, I can help more people in need. And look, I understand that and I appreciate that.
But all money ain't good money.
Well, that's exactly right. All money ain't good money. But the point is that people like us, people like you telling the truth to your audience and us having this conversation, we've got to see to it that those extremely compassionate caregivers are protected even if they don't protect themselves. Mm-hmm. This nation is rich enough and smart enough that we ought to be able to take care of the weakest and poorest people in our society without jeopardizing the institutions of religion and without taking away those people's civil rights.
Is what's happening now, does it feel like kind of like McCarthyism on steroids? I mean, doesn't it seem like it's worse than McCarthyism?
It seems like something that I haven't known before. I was very struck. I caught a part of one of the interviews with former President Carter this last week, and I thought one of the things he said that stuck in my mind. He said, "We talk about divisiveness in this nation and attribute that to the administration." He said, "I think the greatest divide that has come out of this administration is the separation of the administration itself from all former administrations, going somewhere that former administrations simply would not go." And I know that that's being done as a political initiative. I just wish they'd quit using the language and institutions of religion to try to justify it.
But I have to go back to what I started with in the first part of this hour as well. The caller who called up and said with all sincerity, all certainty, that she was comfortable with, she would expect our government to go after a church that advocated a pro-choice position from the pulpit. And that, to me, says that feels like we're in a different place than we were with McCarthyism, because I feel the McCarthyism stuff going on too, but now we have the religious component going on as well.
But Liz, that same caller, just keep in mind, this is a democracy. That means that every 4 years at least, we're going to elect a president. Let's say that in the next election, the administration changes, and the next president of the United States is a pro-choice person ideologically. Then does that caller expect that that president has the right to move the machinery of government to enforce his or her pro-choice position and go after congregations that are pro-life?
Go into their churches.
I hope not. I hope not. But it has. But freedom doesn't work just one way. It has to work always. And unless we're all free, none of us are really free.
Dr. Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance. How can people find out more about the Interfaith Alliance?
You go to our website, www.interfaithalliance.org, or you can call our office for material, 202-639-6370.
Dr. Welton Gaddy, thank you so much.
Liz, keep up the good work.
You too.
All right.
Always a pleasure. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. I will be back after the news. Stay with me.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I remember saying that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
From ABC News, I'm Daniela Bellata. A lawyer for one of Saddam Hussein's co-defendants has been assassinated in Baghdad. ABC's Miguel Marquez is in Iraq.
ABC News has confirmed that two lawyers for a Saddam Hussein co-defendant have been shot in Baghdad. One of them was shot and killed, the other injured. Adel al-Zubaydi was killed and Damer al-Kuzai was wounded. They represent Taha Ramadan, the former vice president of Iraq, also on trial for what the Iraqis say were atrocities at the in Dujail, Iraq, in southern Iraq.
Saddam and seven others are facing trial on charges of crimes against humanity. The former Iraqi dictator's trial is due to resume at the end of the month. The French government okays local curfews in a desperate attempt to stop the violent rioting in and around Paris. ABC's Linda Alban is there.
12 nights of rioting and the violence, which has spread like wildfire to 300 towns around France, was somewhat down overnight. The prime minister went on primetime TV trying to calm the situation with an iron fist and a velvet glove. He announced that more police would be on the street and curfews imposed. He also announced a package of job training, but some say that is too little too late for a problem that has been allowed to simmer on France's political back burner for decades.
Last night, vandals torched about 1,200 cars and two buses. The polls are open in New Jersey and Virginia. Voters are choosing new governors. ABC's Ann Compton in Washington says the White House is keeping an eye on these races.
His name is not on the ballots, but President Bush will take measure of his political clout in the returns. At the 11th hour, he campaigned for the Republican candidate for governor in the dead heat Virginia race, but he was not invited to New Jersey by the Republican there. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
Six big cities are also picking mayors. This is ABC News.
I've trekked through the Nicaraguan jungle. I've scaled the biggest active volcano in Central America. I've waded through alligator-infested waters. I've even outrun armed rebels. My name is Adia Depitan, and I've done all this in a wheelchair.
Let's all discover inner strength. Tuesday nights start at 8 with SOS Coast Guard Rescue, followed by Dirty Jobs at 9. An all-new Tuesday starts at 8 on the Discovery Channel.
Travelocity presents The Roaming Gnome, denouncer of travel myths. First myth, if you fly for the holidays, you can't afford a trip next year.
Pish! With Travelocity, you'll get a great holiday fare plus up to $100 off your next vacation.
Myth two, most people put off holiday shopping till the last minute.
Not me. I finished my shopping in 1975. Hope you like pet rocks.
Book a holiday flight with your MasterCard card and get up to $100 off next year's vacation. Restrictions apply. Travelocity.com/holiday for details. Travelocity. You'll never roam alone.
Devastating may be an understatement when describing the earthquake in Pakistan last month. The official death toll, 73,276. Swiss maker Tamiflu stopped selling the drug in China, instead turning supplies over to the government, saying in the event of a pandemic, the government is best equipped to distribute it. Katie Holmes' ex says Tom Cruise isn't behind their breakup.
Katie Holmes' former fiancé Chris Klein says her being with Tom Cruise has nothing to do with their breakup. He says their romance had run its course.
Men sometimes can find themselves in a relationship with a woman where they want more than she does, and they don't know how to get out of it because, you know, they'd rather sacrifice that and still have her in their life than to push too hard and have her go away.
Starring in the upcoming new movie, Just Friends, Chris Klein says he wishes his ex nothing but happiness. Dave Alford, ABC News, Hollywood.
He dated Holmes for 5 years. I'm Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, a manhunt that began more than a week ago is partially over as one of the subjects of the search is dead. Police say Demetrius Mitchell of St. Louis barricaded himself inside an RV yesterday after being spotted in Van Buren, Arkansas. After a standoff, authorities report a SWAT team found Mitchell dead inside the RV from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Mitchell and his estranged wife, Jamila Harris, were last seen on October 28th. The search for them began when the couple's young son told police that he saw his father shoot his mother. Jamila Harris has not been found. The St. Louis County Council is expected to take up a measure today that would give county residents a little relief from the high cost of natural gas bills. Councilman Kurt Odenwald says his Emergency Tax Relief Act would authorize Laclede Gas to suspend collection of 1.25% of the county's 5% gross tax revenue.
The county stands to receive a windfall of extra income as a result of this spike in natural gas prices. I don't think anyone in county government believes that we should be making money off the backs of our constituents, especially in this really unique and difficult situation.
Odenwald says if the measure is approved, the suspension would be in effect for at least the months of November and December, saving county residents more than $1.5 million this winter. A study on youth smoking finds fault with the movies. The study says nearly 40% of youths who tried smoking say they did it because they saw it on screen. Dartmouth Medical School researchers talked to more than 6,500 kids aged 10 to 14. They compared those most exposed to movie smoking with those least exposed. Those at the higher end were 2.6 times more likely to try smoking. The lead author of the study says smoking in the movies has more influence on the 10 to 14-year-old age group than parents or peers smoking, or whether a young person takes part in other activities such as sports. The researchers asked the movie industry to reduce its portrayal of smoking or showing pictures of cigarette brands. Hollywood is also being urged to consider smoking in its rating data that now includes sex, violence, and profanity. The National Cancer Institute picked up the cost of the study. It's published in Pediatrics from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Finally this hour, Quinn Snyder's Missouri Tigers will conclude their exhibition season tonight with a home game against Missouri Southern. The Tigers won their first exhibition game last Wednesday, 105-56, over Bemidji State. Their regular season opener is Monday against Sam Houston State in the opening round of the preseason NIT. Tip-off tonight is 7 o'clock at the Mizzou Arena. This WGNU News Update is brought to you by Rhodes Furniture. After 130 years, Rhodes Furniture is in bankruptcy and is closing their stores forever in St. Louis, Baldwin, Hazelwood, St. Peter's, and Fairview Heights, Illinois. Everything must be liquidated immediately at sacrifice prices. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryant-Meyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock. Today I'm 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Kohl's Department Store. Westbound 64 between 157, there's an accident. Right lane is blocked. Only left lane is getting by. There are two tractor trailers involved and traffic jams all the way back to 50. That's over on the east side. Eastbound 40 at the last Missouri exit, Broadway exit, that is closed still. You can use 11th or 14th to get around that area. Northbound 55 between Germania and Lafayette, no problems to report. Eastbound 44 from Bowles all the way to Merrimack River Bridge, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 at Lindbergh, that traffic is easing. Northbound 270 from Tesson Ferry to Marshall Road, still stop and go. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road construction, the left lane is closed, no delays at this hour. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason Road, look for heavy volume, then slow in right lanes all the way to 270. Westbound 270 from New Florissant all the way into 170, look for slow traffic in the right lane. Westbound 40 between Clayton, Skinker, and Hanley, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank all the way to Laclede Landing, looks for no problems to report there. Northbound Illinois Route 3, that ramp from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, it is still slow. Westbound 5570 split at 203 all the way to the Poplar Street Bridge, stop and go traffic this hour. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Kohl's Department Stores. Don't miss the big savings this Wednesday only at Kohl's Big Wednesday Special Store-wide. It's Big Wednesday, this Wednesday only from 7 a.m. till 11 p.m. Only at Kohl's. Kohl's, expect great things. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly sunny, warmer today with a high in the lower 80s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s. Moving on to Wednesday, cooler, partly sunny skies, high only in the upper 60s. Those temps will fall in the afternoon into the 60s. Wednesday evening, much colder, partly cloudy with a low around 40. And for Thursday, mostly sunny skies with a high in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 65 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field has 65 degrees as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Did you know that the Defense Department has a program going to access the privacy of young people ages 16 to 25? This database will have personal information about 30 million people to determine if they might be candidates to join the military. Age, sex, do they own a phone, race, religion, and income are just some of the info on file. This is in direct violation of the Privacy Act established to limit the government's use of such information. We'll take a look at this controversial measure with Nancy Talanian, Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, Wednesday morning at 8 on The Wake Up Call. It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I discern?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If
You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches. There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing resolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how do you listen?
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied existence.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is the phone number, 454-6609 is the fax. And if you want a toll-free long-distance me, do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And my goodness gracious. Email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Check me out at whiterosesociety.org. Get up. Get to me. There's so much stuff to talk about. So much stuff. So much stuff to talk about. This is an important story, and I'm going to repeat it. I know that I talked about it in the 6 o'clock hour and a little bit in the last hour, but I have to repeat this because this is a story that is frightening to me. And then I'm going to go to another story that you should be consider frightening as well. The Internal Revenue Service. There are a couple of things that coincide with this. The elections that are going on today, the elections that are going on in California today, it's all on the line for the gubernator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, in California. There are a number of propositions on the ballot that have not received the support. They don't expect them to pass, and these are all ballot efforts and actions by Arnold Schwarzenegger. We have an election going on in Virginia. We have an election going on in New Jersey. New Jersey, they told Bush, stay away. Virginia, they said, please come on. All three of these elections will be, we can interpret them as a bear weather. We can interpret them as a conclusion. We can interpret them as heads up or heads down for this administration. What's going to happen in the 2006 midterm elections? And from all political talk out there, from all political assessments, interpretations, strategizing, theorizing, Arnold Schwarzenegger is dead in the water if these ballot issues do not pass. He's told George Bush, stay away. It's so bad for Arnold right now that they're saying that when he loses these, and that the prediction is that he's going to lose these ballot efforts, that he is just a sitting duck waiting for the next person. His approval rating, he's competing with, you know, and God knows he's a competitive fella. Steroids make that happen for you. Very competitive. So he and George Bush are competing for who has the lowest approval ratings. And that right now they're running neck and neck, 36-39, 36-39, 3 percentage point. They're running neck and neck. with who people dislike more. So this is a very big day for America. It's not a huge day, but it's a big day to see what the pulse of America is. What the pulse of America is. And if George Bush loses, or his candidate loses in Virginia, it's a big deal. He came there, it didn't help. And if he loses in New Jersey, it's a big deal. Or it's a message to other, if the Republican wins, it's a message to the other Republicans, don't let George come. If he calls, you know, just like look at your cell phone, raise your eyebrows, and then click it over into voicemail. So don't answer the phone if he calls. This country, I'm not overstating, I'm not kidding. This country, this is a big deal. What happened at All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena, California? The Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, has said that the California's largest, we're talking about over 3,000 parishioners, largest and most liberal churches is at risk of losing its tax-exempt status because of an anti-war sermon 2 days before the 2004 presidential election. What did the pastor say? Well, his sermon imagined how Jesus would admonish Bush and Kerry if he debated them. Regas, the pastor, never urged the parishioners to vote for one candidate over the other, but he did say he believes that Jesus would oppose the war in Iraq, and that Jesus would be saddened by Bush's position on the use and testing of nuclear weapons. In the sermon, Regas said, quote, President Bush has led us into war with Iraq as a response to terrorism, yet I believe Jesus would say to Bush and Kerry, war is itself the most extreme form of terrorism. President Bush, you have not made dramatically clear what have been the human consequences of the war in Iraq. Later on, this pastor went on to say that he had Jesus confront Kerry and Bush. I will tell you what I think of war. This is Jesus talking. The sin at the heart of this war against Iraq is your belief that an American life is of more value than an Iraqi life, that an American child is more precious than an Iraqi baby. God loathes war. If Jesus debated Bush and Kerry, Regas said, he would say to them, why is so little mentioned about the poor? That's what he said. He also said, he also spoke out on pro-choice. He says, now the faith, he says, the religious right has drowned out everyone else. Now the faith of Jesus has come to be known as pro-rich, pro-war, and pro-American. I am not pro-abortion, but pro-choice. There is something vicious and violent about coercing a woman to carry to term an unwanted child. As a result of that, the IRS audit team has issued a statement to them, saying that the federal tax code prohibits tax-exempt organizations, including churches, from intervening in political campaigns and elections. The letter went on to say that our concerns are based on a November 1st newspaper article in the LA Times and a sermon presented at All Saints Church discussed in the article. They said that it was a searing indictment of the Bush administration's policies in Iraq and noted that the sermon described tax cuts as wrong to the values of Jesus. And what is interesting is that on the same day that this pastor was preaching against war, saying that Jesus was a peacekeeper, dirty words to this administration. There was also an issue on the ballot where churches throughout California took stance on both sides of Proposition 73, which would bar abortions for minors unless the parents are notified. And none of those churches got letters. Are you scared yet? Are you scared yet? McCarthy has nothing over us. We're in new territory. We're in new territory. JJ, good morning.
Good morning. I want to try to talk about abortion.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to need your help. I remember when abortion was illegal, and woman who got an illegal abortion, and then the ambulance came and got her because she was dying. And I remember when abortion started to become legal and you could go to New York or California and get it done, so you had to pay for an airline ticket. Well, you know, okay. And then I remember when it became legal. And when it became legal, girls my age thought, oh, it was, in your mind, it was like you had a toothache and you needed to go get your tooth pulled. And then everything would be back to normal. That's, you just didn't even think about it. But then the pro-life movement started, and they hammered the message. You can't help but begin to think more about it. Okay, yeah, if I don't get an abortion, this is going to be a baby 9 months down the road. And, yeah, okay, maybe I need to think long and hard before I get an abortion, or maybe I just won't get an abortion. Okay, that they changed my thinking. Before it was like go get my tooth filled, and now here is what will be a human life, or a growing of a human life. But I can't have the government say, no, you can't do this. You know, it's not their place. All I'm saying is, or trying to say, it's impossible almost to talk about abortion. These people have hijacked this thing. The government uses that one issue to manipulate, fearmonger.
And don't forget, motivate, because there is no reason, and this, I believe this, JJ, I believe this with all my heart, never in our lifetime and in anybody else's lifetime will the religious right or the social conservatives that are advocating the pro-life issue, never will they ever do away with abortion. Because they cannot rally their base if they do away with it. What will happen is there will be an incrementalization of making it tougher and tougher and tougher for women to get an abortion.
Yes.
But it won't be done away with because they can't motivate their base if it is done away with.
That's true, Liz. That's exactly true. And that's why I'm almost at the point, but I'm not. It's like, give it to them. Women will get abortions. They have been doing it since girls will get abortions because they're girls and they're me,
women.
me.
Well, no, women.
I want my life to be easier.
No, well, that's some, but there's also women, girls that have been raped.
Yeah.
Women that have three kids and can't afford, married women that have three kids and can't afford another child.
Yeah.
There are a million different
reasons
why a woman or a child would consider or do an abortion.
Right. But, let's see, where was I going? I told you I was going to need help with this. This is so hard to talk about. Okay, let me just say this other thing. It seems like recently, within the last couple of months, since Katrina, I'll say, it's like the lights have come on and the roaches are scurrying, and it's making me, when the election in 2004, I thought, surely this can't happen again. But it did, you know, and I'm just like, is it me? Why? I can't talk today, Liz, so you better just cut me off. But it is so hard to talk about abortion. Okay, I better stop. I can't talk.
Okay, thanks, JJ. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Yes, you're on the wake-up call.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
Well, this is a class thing. I knew a doctor in the West End. My sister-in-law worked for him. I won't mention any names. He had a room set up in the back of his offices. The rich girls came in the back door. Their mothers would bring them, teenagers. They got their abortions. This was before abortion was legal. The doctor's long passed on. But he had a nice little business going there.
Well, of course.
Illegal, but this was for people that could afford it.
No, these are white women that could afford it.
Yes, ma'am.
These are white women that could
afford
it. West End. That's right.
White
women who could afford this.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely, absolutely. And women will get abortions. Women will always get abortions.
And the poor woman had to do the coat hanger thing.
And die.
And infections and all kinds of different problems, exactly.
And the fact of the matter is that it's such a personal choice. If you don't want to have one, then don't have one.
I don't feel that I have the right, as a man, to tell a woman what to do in that case.
You certainly have the right to put your influence in, but you don't have a right to tell her to do that because it's not your decision. It will always
That's
come
exactly
down to the
right.
woman's decision.
And
absolutely.
It's...
And I think it is wrong. I think it is absolutely wrong for a government to force a woman to have a child, particularly a government I mean, it would be one thing if we lived in a society that every baby that came out of a woman had, that we had something in our Constitution, like the Japanese have in their Constitution, to protect the life of a child once they get here, that the child has a guarantee of health care, that the child has a guarantee of quality education, of access to jobs. If we protected the children once they got here, then it would be one thing to say, okay, well, you know, somebody's going to take care of that baby. We don't live in a society that values the children once they come out their mama's womb.
If we're so concerned, you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. You see it every day. I'm from the 30s. And if they're so concerned about the life of that child, why aren't they concerned about the life of starting wars and killing the child when he grows up at 18, 19 years old in the military?
Thanks for your call.
You have a good weekend.
Take care of yourself. 454-0400 is my phone number. Hello, this is Liz Brown, and it's that time of the year again, the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. And I'm just here to tell you that there is a meeting this Saturday at 10 a.m. for all of you wonderful volunteers for the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. 10 a.m., 4919 North Union. As you know, we are partnering with our wonderful friends at Carver House. We want this blanket drive to be successful, exciting, and wonderful, and we need you to make that happen. So if you haven't called to volunteer, that's okay. Come to the meeting this Saturday at 10 a.m. at 4919 North Union. You'll get your t-shirts, you'll get your assignments, and we'll all be ready to take in the thousands of blankets we're going to get on November 18th and 19th when we have, once again, the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. I'll see you this Saturday, 10 a.m., 4919 North Union. All of you volunteers, can't wait to see you. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Hey, Liz. How you doing?
Andre, good morning.
Okay. Yeah, this whole issue of abortion is really interesting to me to see how it's being played out anyway. Because, like, I agree with you. I don't believe that the right wing, if they're really going to play the game right, will ultimately do away with it because, like you said, they will lose their support. Just like they really don't want to push the ban on same-sex marriage to its ultimate conclusion. None of these hot-button issues because they're moneymakers. But at the same time, I can't relate to it personally how any man in his right mind could actually be so... could have such hubris as to presume himself, whether he's married to the woman or not, presume himself to have the right to tell her ultimately what she is going to do with her body. No man is going to carry a pregnancy.
The same class of men that didn't think women should vote, the same class of men that still maintain clubs that women aren't allowed, even though their mothers are women and their wives are women and their daughters are women and their aunts and nieces are women, those type of men, how they would have the hubris to tell a woman what to do with the same class of men that don't pay women the same salary, the same class of men that don't support the ERA, those men?
Yeah, and even worse, those men who identify with them who don't even belong to that class and never will, because you have that problem too. And women who will side with them, those same women who breastfed those little boys who grew up to discriminate against them.
That's trippy.
It really is.
All right, now.
And the other thing I want to ask you about, I don't know if you spoke about it or not because I haven't been able to listen every morning all the way through. What is going on with this election today?
You know what? I'm just voting no because there's just not enough information out here.
Because I mean, it's like, where did they slip this one in?
I know. under the radar.
I'm going, but I think I'll do the same.
Yeah.
Just no.
No. Thanks for your...
And as far as I know, we have what is considered the best. Actually, ours is supposed to be the clearinghouse in the country for the fire trucks and things.
This is a city that has delivered every single time that it's asked for a bond issue for our public schools. I advocated against two of the bond issues because we didn't know where the money was going to. They said, oh, no, that we can never not put air conditioning in the schools.
Uh-huh.
Well, they've done it. They've taken the money. They've torn the schools down,
uh-huh.
and they haven't spent the money. I don't trust this city to do right with any bond money.
Nope.
I'm voting no. Thanks for your
All
call,
right.
Andre. We're going to take a break, folks. I'm Liz Brown. This is a wake-up call. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about.
Good morning, St. Louis. 34 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Westbound 64 before Illinois 157 over on the east side is closed due to accident crews removing the tractor trailers that were involved. Now there's a report of a stall in the left lane near the accident scene and traffic jams approaching 50. Westbound 70 at Jennings Station Road is an accident, and that has been cleared, and traffic still jams at Union, so use caution as you roll up to those areas. Eastbound 44 between Chrysler and Merrimack River Bridge, look for a heavy volume there. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs to Blanchett Bridge, everything is running smoothly. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Lindbergh, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to Marshall, it is stop and go. Westbound 70 at 94, look for left lane closed. There are no delays this hour, that's due to road construction. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason Road, that traffic is easing up now. Westbound 270 from Riverview all the way to Washington, Elizabeth looks good. Westbound 40 between Big Bend and Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank all the way onto Laclede's Landing. It is very heavy volume there. Westbound 5570 split from 4th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic. North Taylor at McPherson, there's a report of an injury accident. And in both directions, 141 between Bowles and Gravoy, you can expect maintenance operations to have one lane closed, as well as in both directions, Natural Bridge from McKibben all the way to 170. You've got paving operations with various lane closures. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Start your day with a warm McGriddle sandwich and a great cup of coffee. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly sunny skies today, warmer with a high in the lower 80s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s. Then on Wednesday, things change. Cooler, partly sunny, high only in the middle 60s, as the temps will fall in the afternoon to the 60-degree mark. Wednesday evening, much colder, partly cloudy with a low around 40. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny skies with a high only in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 68 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 67. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, your weather, and a final look at traffic in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Remember when New Orleans was flooded during Hurricane Katrina? Liz Brown was only one of a few people that asked the question, what happened to the prisoners that were locked away there? Here's the answer she got. And here's the latest update. We're pursuing this issue even further Thursday morning at 8 with Corinne Carey, researcher and lawyer for Human Rights Watch USA. Is it true that they were abandoned in their cells with no food as the floodwaters rose? Or worse? Be here Thursday morning at 8, exclusively on The Wake Up Call. Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show. Every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
If you have a travel question, we'll try to find the answer for you.
Tell a friend and tune us in. 2 to 4 Saturday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU.
A Missouri boater education course will be offered at the August A. Bush Conservation Area, 2360 Highway D in St. Charles, on November 15th and 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. both nights. Boat operators must be 14 or older unless accompanied by an adult. This course is open to all ages, but registrants should be old enough to follow and understand the material. The $15 fee covers the cost of the certification card. Registration is required by November 15th. To find out more or to register, call 573-751-2333 or visit www.mswp.dps.mo.gov. Something for boaters from WGNU.
The Wake Up Call Blanket Drive is set for Friday, November 18th. Volunteers are needed to man the two collection sites at Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, and the lobby of the Congress and Senate Building, the home of WGNU, at 265 Union. Blankets to be accepted that morning starting at 6 o'clock. The actual broadcast from Carver House starts at 7. If you can help us help those in need, call the WGNU business office this morning at 454-6660 or email your contact information to revolution@lizbrown.com. All volunteers receive a free second annual blanket drive t-shirt as a thank you.
You're listening to Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU Radio, 920 on your AM dial and at WGNU.net.
The Bush administration claims the economy is wonderful, but only 25% of workers make at least $16 an hour and have health insurance and a pension. A new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research reveals that in the last 25 years, with a workforce better educated and experienced, 75% of workers continue to struggle in jobs that are low paying and have little or no benefits. Don't miss economist John Schmidt of CERP for Good Economy, Bad Jobs on the award-winning Wake Up Call, Tuesday at 9.
This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Earlene, good morning.
Hey, Liz.
How are you?
Fine. I had to call in when the lady was saying something about young girls. Now, unless the statistics have changed, I've always read that the overwhelming majority of people who have abortions are married white women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are women who just simply say, I cannot, you know, deal with another child. So, you know, that fallacy that somehow these are young teenage girls, and also having worked in an agency where we dealt with children and we were on a network of different youth serving agencies, I found out that the reason there's such a brouhaha about the whole abortion issue is because as a result of the pill primarily and then abortion to some extent, healthy white babies are not available for adoption. And that's what drives a lot of this.
There are so many things that are behind the push. There are some people who honestly, truly do believe that it is a sin and that it is wrong. And they are absolutely entitled to that.
To their belief.
To their belief. But we cannot ignore the politicalization of this issue. And whenever there is a politicalization of an issue like this, there is an agenda behind it.
Of course.
And that agenda isn't about the protection protection of little babies.
Not
that
at all.
It is not about the love of life, because how if that were so,
they'd be adopting all these children who are foster, you know,
No, I'm not even going to say that they would be adopting these children. If it is about life, we would have a political party that would have thought long and hard before sending somebody's child to die in war.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, I mean, so if you value, there are too many inconsistencies with the position of being pro-life. Too many people, political people, hide behind that mantra to try and say something about themselves that is not so. You cannot be pro-life when you are pro-death penalty. You cannot be pro-life when you are when you would preemptively strike a country that hasn't done anything to you and kill the life that is there. You cannot be pro-life. So it's about a political agenda that gets people to the voting booth. It's about a political agenda that gets money in coffers. It's about a political agenda of people who want to be in power to determine what money their friends are going to get. And how do I get there? I'm hopping on the back of pro-life.
And too many people follow that blindly. Let me give a heads up to the drivers out there at the corner of Page and Hanley. I don't know how many other intersections have it, but it's equipped with the cameras.
Pay, how do you know?
I saw them.
Okay.
Each intersection has the camera mounted above the traffic light so that they will take your picture if you even go through a yellow light. People, you cannot go through a yellow light. It means be ready to stop, not speed through the light. And I'd like to challenge everyone out there to look at the major intersections and kind of call in so we can keep track of where these are. But Page and Hanley, they're there. I saw them 2 days ago.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
454-0400, 454-6609 is my fax. Get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Hassan.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding.
You know, this abortion issue fascinates me. From the political aspect, I agree with everything you said. But from the perspective of human responsibility, personal responsibility, I wonder why we don't think about abortion before we engage in the act that produces children.
Well, people do. That's why people take the pill. People wear condoms. People do all of those things.
Okay, but when a baby still results. The sister before me hit it right on the head when she said that it was mostly affluent people who make up the majority of the abortions performed in this nation. Because I tend to agree with the Holy Quran. And Allah cautions believers not to marry women who kill their children. Now, that's not a concrete absolute chiseled in stone.
What does it say about men who
kill? Wait a minute. In case of rape, incest, or the mother's life is in danger, in which case that is her decision. If her life is in danger, she's been raped, or a family member has impregnated her, then abortion is allowed.
Does the Quran say that?
Oh, yeah.
Incest?
Incest, rape.
What does the Quran say?
Wait a minute. If the mother's life is in danger, then abortion is permissible.
Okay, so you're interpreting from that line that includes incest and that includes rape.
No, it says it in plain language.
Well, then tell me what in plain language it says about rape.
Abortion is permissible.
Tell me the line. Read me the line that talks about rape. What does it say?
Well, that's in the footnotes when it says that marry not women who kill their children.
Okay.
Then you go to the footnotes and it's explained then, in those cases only.
Okay,
that's not an interpretation. There's
I'm asking. No, no, I'm asking you for the quote and you're not giving me the quote.
I don't have the Quran in front of me right now as I make
and
this
that's
call
what
I, to you.
But that's
but
what that, I'm asking you for. So
maybe
you're giving
other
me
believers a call in
no,
and confirm what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I would need that confirmed.
Well, I'll look it up for you. It's not hard to find.
Okay, well then do that.
If you want me to call you back, I'll do that. But other than these three cases, when you think about it, abortion is only as a result of some inconvenience. It's only as a this baby is inconvenient. I have to feed and care for this baby. I have to do all the things that a responsible parent must do. And my lifestyle doesn't permit it. My mindset doesn't permit it.
So you're saying that the woman that is in a marriage with a abusive man, a woman that is in a marriage with a man where she has five children, where she didn't want to have any more kids. The husband faked her birth control pills, and she gets pregnant. And she knows that the child that's going to come here, they can't afford the child, that the other children will suffer as a result of that, that the family will suffer as a result of that. That's not an inconvenience.
I don't necessarily buy into this automatic idea of suffering. In the mid-60s, when I was fathering my second child, we were still teenagers, my ex-wife and I we had just had one baby. The baby was still in arms, and my ex-wife come up pregnant again. And so we discussed this as teenagers in the 60s.
Yes.
But my conscience wouldn't go along with that, so I took it to my Uncle Sonny, God rest his soul, and he asked me one question: who's going to starve? I don't think life is that difficult. It may take some.
I think that's naive. I think that that's naive to think that.
We didn't abort that baby.
Well, that was your choice.
And
that's your choice. That is absolutely your choice. But babies do starve. Babies do suffer.
Well, we got
to take a break. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We have much, much, much to talk about. There are people suffering in this country. There is suffering. My name is Liz Brown. We'll be back.
There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you can hear it if you try. And it's growing stronger with every day that passes by.
This hour's Global News Update can be heard in its entirety next Tuesday at this time slot.
It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union.
We've got townhomes from $250, single families from $300.
2 years ago, this neighborhood was all potential. Now, this real estate agent is selling the city's fastest-growing community with help from Network Solutions. Their website design professionals helped her build a great new home online for her business.
My new website has, well, loads of charm and lots of original features.
So you'd call it a real must-see?
No, I'd call it one hot property.
Move your business to a better neighborhood. Visit NetworkSolutions.com and go farther.
Medicine Shop Pharmacy, may I help you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have dialed the wrong number. You see, I'm filling out my Medicare prescription drug coverage enrollment form, and I have some questions.
Well, I can help.
Really?
Absolutely. As a Medicine Shop pharmacist, it's my pleasure to answer your questions about enrollment for Medicare prescription drug coverage. When you've got the right information, it's a lot easier than you might think. Just stop by, and I'll assist you in deciding on a plan that meets your needs.
Well, that's a real load off my mind.
Well, I'm here to help you in any way I can.
The Medicine Shop Pharmacy. Caring beyond prescriptions.
Former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter will be our special guest on Mondays at 9 on November 14th. He was in Iraq as an inspector for 7 years and made it very clear before the invasion began that Iraq was not in possession of weapons of mass destruction and that trying to oust Saddam Hussein would be extremely dangerous. He's also on record as saying the president has betrayed the American people by building the Iraqi threat on lies, and he might stoop to any level to do most anything. An exclusive wake-up call interview with Scott Ritter, coming up on the November 14th edition of Mondays at 9.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
The Bush administration claims the economy is wonderful, but only 25% of workers make at least $16 an hour and have health insurance and a pension. A new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research reveals that in the last 25 years, with a workforce better educated and experienced, 75% of workers continue to struggle in jobs that are low-paying and have little or no benefits. Don't miss economist John Schmidt of CERP for Good Economy, Bad Jobs on the award-winning Wake Up Call, Tuesday at 9.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up, get to me. Ex-Peter, good morning.
Good morning, sister. How are you this morning?
I'm outstanding.
Now, I was reading on the final call about the riots and things, not the so-called riots, the unrest that's going on.
The rebellion that is going on.
Well, yeah, it is looking like a rebellion or a resurrection that's going on in France. And I really stand behind these oppressed people that's venting out this anger and despair. It's been going on for years and years, and you see the same type.
Wait a minute, Peter. Wait a minute. How was Oprah treated when she went to Paris?
Well, she was treated like
one of the West Africans, like one of the, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, so we're not even talking about something that is confined to these suburban areas.
Well, this is the same type of thing you've seen whenever you have a black African population come up against a large majority of white supremacist Caucasians like we have in France. And it goes on in the other European countries too, especially Britain, because they just went through a similar sort of thing, but it was between the black West African and the Asians. But France appears to me as if she don't understand how to handle such a problem like this. This is a shock to France. But you remember back, what was it, about 2 years ago with the statement that Aristide made that France should pay reparations to Haiti?
No, let's just look how France took care of Haiti.
Well, yeah, just look how France took care of Haiti. Look how America treated Haiti, too.
Exactly.
You know, if
exactly.
It wasn't for what Haiti done, what we know is the United States probably would have stopped at the Appalachian Mountains.
Absolutely.
Yes, but we see these things going on continuous day after day.
All right.
And also, there's an election that's going on in Liberia, which means free country, which is a misnomer because the country was free until, you know, that drastic thing that happened back, you know, years ago. But you got an election between, I believe, this former soccer player, Wehe, is wasn't part of the experiment of the former slaves being imported back into that country. And he's running against a lady by the name of Ellen Johnson. I'm going to watch this real closely and see how it is. And Liberia is one of those six countries that the United States government paid money to, not the country, but to the leader. You know, you had Liberia, Sudan, Somalia, Ethiopia, Uganda, and Zaire. And based on them paying money to these corrupt leaders. And you only had one that I really paid some respect to, and that was Idi Amin. But based on paying these leaders money, they just ran these countries into the ground, further ran them into the ground.
Thanks for your
call. Keep up your good work.
All right, thanks,
Peter.
454-0400 is my phone number. Car phone?
Yes, Liz, I got a suggestion on the abortion issue. If you let the child live about 3 hours and then let the mother make the decision to let it live or die, I think that would solve a lot of problems, because killing it at that time is no different than killing it at 7 months or 8 months or 9 months. So let it live about 3 hours and then let the mother decide.
Well, I there are people, Gary, and that's what's so wonderful about this country. There are people, there are scientists, there are philosophers, there are theologians, and there are regular citizens out here that disagree very strongly with you about when life begins. That is a discussion that has been going on since the beginning of time. And people people of good faith, good people, kind people, loving people, believe that life does not begin at 3 months, prior to 3 months.
Scott Peterson believes he's in prison for murdering his unborn child.
And that's because the laws of this nation have said that that can be a crime. 20 years ago, that wasn't a crime. Did it mean that it was not a crime? All that means is that there are laws in the books that say that simply because a law exists doesn't mean that your belief about something should be different. I believe that murder is wrong. I believe that it is wrong to murder.
But wait a minute.
Do you believe in the death penalty, Gary?
I'm getting away from that. I don't care for the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. But there are many people out there that are like you that do believe in the death penalty. People in this country have it's a philosophical discussion, and it's a theological discussion, and it's an emotional discussion. And the fact of the matter is that there are people who believe that they are just as right as you are about when life begins.
Well, regardless, after every abortion, you have a car.
Regardless?
Dead baby.
Regardless?
Yeah.
Again, if people do not believe that life...
Do you agree with that there's a dead baby afterwards?
No, I don't. I don't believe that an abortion...
What do you do with the corpse?
I don't believe that at 1 month, at 2 months, that there is a dead baby. No.
No arms, no legs, a head, everything? What do you do with that?
I do not believe that that is life, Gary. We're allowed to disagree on that. Well, we're allowed to disagree on that, Gary. And that's the wonderful thing about this country. That's
a
great
thing.
Absolutely. You too. 454-0400 is my phone number. Welcome to the Wake Up Call.
Yes. Okay, this is Gabby. I just want to tell you, Hassan was right about the Quran saying that the types of abortion that could be allowed. And I don't have my Quran with me, but I will look it up, and one day I'll call you back and let you know what he was talking about, but it is true.
Well, again, I'd have to see it. I'd have to see it.
Okay. And I'm going out to vote no, girl.
All right, now.
Bye-bye.
You're on the Wake Up Call.
Yes, Liz, I saw the BBC overnight, and they were showing people in the U.S. standing in line for canned goods and food, and they said, this country... prior to what it used to be is now a country divided into winners and losers. And it said, unlike the United States, the governments of Western Europe and Scandinavia don't believe in exposing their workers to third world labor.
Thank you. And this is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. I'll be back in the next hour with John Schmidt, economist with the Center for Economy and Policy Research. He'll be joining us from Washington, D.C. You think it's bad? No, it's worse than you thought. I'll be back.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daniela Belanta. French officials authorize a curfew. ABC's Mike Lee in Paris.
What that means is that local officials will have the option of banning teenagers from various streets after 10 o'clock at night. That's a very important element because the vast majority of rioters are under the age of 18, and until now they've just been free to run the streets.
The violent rioting beginning almost 2 weeks ago after two boys were accidentally electrocuted while running from police. In Baghdad, gunmen opened fire on a car carrying two lawyers defending some of Saddam Hussein's co-defendants. ABC's Miguel Marquez is there.
One of them shot and killed, the other wounded. Adel al-Zubaydi was killed. Tamer al-Kuzai was wounded. They both represent the former vice president of Iraq.
The shooting follows the assassination of a lawyer for another Saddam co-defendant. Arnold Schwarzenegger is not up for re-election, but he's putting his reputation on the line today by asking voters to approve his plans to fix the state's budget.
Schwarzenegger asking Californians to give him more budget power, make it harder for school teachers to get tenure.
Andy Phil, ABC News, Washington.
They're choosing a governor in New Jersey and Virginia. Six big cities are also electing their next mayors. White House staff are taking an ethics refresher today in response to the CIA leak.
No exceptions, the order from the White House counsel's office says. Everyone working for the president with any level of security clearance, and that's just about everyone, must go to a refresher course on ethics and security. Lawyers will remind White House employees how they must handle secret materials. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
Jennifer Aniston has no regrets about her divorce from Brad Pitt. She tells ABC's Diane Sawyer she's moved on, but she refuses to confirm whether or not she's now dating Vince Vaughn.
Pictures are the pictures. He's my friend, absolutely. Dear friend.
Jennifer says she has talked to Brad and it was peaceful. This is ABC News.
I've trekked through the Nicaraguan jungle. I've scaled the biggest active volcano in Central America. I've waded through alligator-infested waters. I've even outrun armed rebels. My name is Adia Depitan, and I've done all this in a wheelchair.
Let's all discover inner strength. Tuesday night, start at 8 with SOS Coast Guard Rescue. Followed by Dirty Jobs at 9. An all-new Tuesday starts at 8 on the Discovery Channel.
Travelocity presents The Roaming Gnome, denouncer of travel myths. First myth, if you fly for the holidays, you can't afford a trip next year.
Pish! With Travelocity, you'll get a great holiday fare plus up to $100 off your next vacation.
Myth two, most people put off holiday shopping till the last minute.
Not me. I finished my shopping in 1975. Hope you like pet rocks.
Book a holiday flight with your MasterCard card and get up to $100 off next year's vacation. Restrictions apply. Travelocity.com/holiday for details. Travelocity. You'll never roam alone.
In Texas, voters deciding today on whether a ban on same-sex marriage should be written into the state's constitution.
Gay marriage is already illegal in Texas, but State Representative Robert Talton wants to make it harder for the state to accept same-sex couples.
The reason you put it in the constitution so that you don't have to recognize it from any other state.
The proposal would also ban gay couples from entering into certain civil contracts.
Homosexual couples, they want to live together, they want to contract together, they can obviously do that. They can do that now.
Brent Fuller, ABC News, Houston.
A steamy novel by Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff is a hot item online. A novel written by Lewis Scooter Libby, who is facing charges of perjury and obstruction of justice, is selling on Amazon.com for $2,400. Unsigned hardcover copies are going for $700. A backward fairy tale, Japan's princess will marry her commoner fiancé next week. That means she'll have to leave her family's royal confines. I'm Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, Pinnacle Entertainment will break ground today on its new casino development in South County. The $375 million project in Lima will also include a hotel, retail and entertainment space, and a public park. Work is also underway on a new Pinnacle Gaming project on the St. Louis riverfront. In response to several murders in Belleville this year, the city is hosting a special event tonight. Mayor Mark Eckert explains the purpose behind an evening of peace and healing.
We hope that we can share information, you know, have some words of comfort, and certainly promote peace, and certainly remind people to spread the word about the types of programs that are present in our community where they can reach help.
The event is designed to bring the community together in the wake of a triple murder in March and a quadruple murder last month. Eckert says the majority of the murders in Belleville stem from some type of domestic abuse. The event begins at 7 p.m. at the Lindenwood University Auditorium. St. Louis native Ryan Howard is the National League Rookie of the Year. Howard became the everyday first baseman for the Phillies when Jim Thome went down with an elbow injury at the end of June and went on to post a .288 average with 22 home runs and 63 RBI in 88 games. The Lafayette grad beat out Houston's Willie Tavares and Atlanta's Jeff Francoeur for the award. Finally this hour, A Little Chicken is posting big numbers at the movie box office. Chicken Little, the new animated film that's being called the first fully computer animated movie produced by Walt Disney, surpassed industry expectations in its first weekend out in theaters. It reeled in an estimated $40.1 million to top the box office. The family-friendly film features the voice of Scrub star Zach Braff, as well as Gary Marshall, Joan Cusack, Steve Zahn, and others. Coming in second was the new military drama Jarhead, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Jamie Foxx, with $28.8 million. Last weekend's box office champ, the horror thriller Saw 3, slipped to number 3 this weekend with $17.2 million in box office receipts. It was followed by The Legend of Zorro at number 4 with $10 million, and the Uma Thurman Meryl Streep comedy Prime at number 5 with $5.3 million. This WGNU news report is brought to you by TomTom. With a TomTom, you just tap on the screen and a helpful voice guides you where you're going. Grab it and go. TomTom is your portable everyday GPS solution. Visit TomTom.com and you're on your way. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Kohl's Department Stores. Westbound 64 from 157. Look for an accident. Only one lane is getting by as crews continue to work to clear it. Traffic jams still at US 50. That's coming westbound on 64 over on the east side. Westbound 70 at Lucas and Hunt. There's an accident reported, so use caution as you roll up to that area. Eastbound 40, the last Missouri exit, Broadway exit, that ramp is still closed. You can use the 11th Street or 14th Street to get around that area. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and Lindbergh, look for no problems report. Eastbound 40 from Spady to Handley, traffic is moving freely. Northbound 270 at 44 has returned back to normal. Westbound 255 from Jefferson Barracks all the way to Lee May Ferry looks good. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road construction. The left lane is closed. Westbound 270 from Chain of Rocks Bridge to West Florissant, look for no problems to report there. Westbound 40 between Big Bend and Hanley is easing. Eastbound 70 at St. Louis Avenue, look for road maintenance operations. They have the exit ramp there closed. Eastbound 370 from Elm to St. Louis Mills Parkway, look for road maintenance operations. Left lanes are closed. Eastbound 40 at the Boone Bridge, there's maintenance operations. The right lane is closed. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank all the way onto Laclede's Landing looks good. Westbound 5570 split all the way to the PSB. Traffic is easing by. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Kohl's Department Stores. Don't miss the big savings this Wednesday only at Kohl's Big Wednesday. Special store-wide, it's Big Wednesday this Wednesday only, 7 a.m. till 11 p.m. only at Kohl's. Kohl's expect great things. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly sunny today, warmer with a high in the lower 80s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s. Wednesday, cooler, partly cloudy, high only in the upper 60s as the temps will fall through the afternoon into the 60-degree mark. For Wednesday evening, much colder, partly cloudy with a low around 40. And Thursday, mostly sunny skies with a high only in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 68 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Lambert Field has 67 and some clouds as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. She speaks with John Schmidt, the economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. That's up next right here on the wake-up call. We'll take another look at your news and weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union.
hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up. Get up. Get to me. We talk about all the time on this show. Well, we talk about at least frequently on this show. How we doing out here? And we talk about it from the perspective of the laws that have been put in place. We talk about it from the perspective of the social issues that impact us. We talk about it from the perspective of how the world of politics impacts and affects our lives out here. One of the things that we need to talk about as we evaluate our lives out here is, how we doing with the jobs that we have? How's that going? How's that going for us? And we need to talk about it in my favorite way of talking about things, in a compare and contrast type of way. As I've always felt that that's the best way to illustrate, or at least to understand, issues. To do compare and contrast. Where we were before, where we are now, and where does that leave us? We're going to do that this morning as we examine a report written by John Schmidt, an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. A report, How Good Is the Economy at Creating Good Jobs? John, good morning.
Good Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Very good. How good is the economy at creating good jobs? I guess that kind of depends on how you define a good job. Define that for us.
Well, it's hard to define a good job and be completely, satisfy absolutely everybody's definition of that. So what we've done in this report is take a pretty simple definition and one that we can match to the data that we have available, and it's the following. The job pays at least $16 an hour, which is roughly $32,000 a year. It has employer-paid health insurance, and it has some kind of a pension plan. So those are the three criteria that we used, and we found that in 2004, which is the most recent data we have available, about 25% of Americans had a job that fit those three different criteria at the same time.
Well, when you go back and use this criteria for, let's say, the 70s, mm-hmm. how does that compare?
Well, the interesting thing is if we compare the 1979, which is the earliest year we can construct this data for, with 2004, we have essentially the identical amount of workers in a good job, as I just defined it. The thing that I think people have to understand about that is we are 60% richer as a country today than when we were back in 1979. So essentially all of the improvement in the wealth in our economy over that period has resulted in actually no improvement in the relative amount of good jobs in the country over that period, which I think is an astonishing indictment of the way the economy's been working.
That's what I was going to ask you. Were you stunned by this?
Yeah, I was. You got to normally think that there's a little bit of trickle down happening. I mean, I know it's certainly not my favorite economic policy, but you know, if people do well at the top, you kind of think, well, you know, it must make it down a little bit further. Just, you know, the stuff that just, you know, spills over the top of their glass or something is going to come down and we're going to get it a little lower. But I was really surprised to see just how essentially nothing that had improved over this period in terms of the economy had actually made it any further down than the very top.
And the worker today is, I guess from an employer's perspective, we have a better worker in the year 2004 than we had in 1979.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think people don't really understand. I mean, the one of the main reasons why we have on a per-person basis 60% more income now than we did back in 1979, you know, after you adjust for inflation, a worker today just produces, you know, over 60% more than what a worker produced back in 1979. But the reason for that is because our workforce is actually 5 or 6 years older than it was. That means it's a lot more experienced. And it's much better educated. We have many, many more college graduates now than we did at the end of the 1970s. And we actually have far fewer people who left high school without getting a degree. And I think there's, you know, a tendency to portray workers today as somehow not up to what they were in the past. But it's exactly the opposite is the truth. We're actually much more productive, much better educated, and more job experience.
And I know that when you look at the want ads and you look for entry-level positions, they're demanding and getting college-degreed people for entry-level positions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think the employers have become really spoiled over the last 25, 30 years. They're able to get people that have very high levels of skills to do jobs that we would have thought in the past didn't require that level of skills. And they're able to pay them less than they would have in the past as well.
So when we talk about the good job components, the factors that you use to go into the definition of good job, talk to us about what kind of health care we're talking about.
Well, the definition that we use is pretty straightforward. It's, do you have a job where your employer pays part or all of your health insurance premium? And on its face, that sounds pretty good. There's a couple difficulties. One, the share of employers that pay only part has increased a lot. So over the period that we're looking at,
gone from paying for all to paying part.
Exactly. From all of the premium to now, you have to pay 20% or you have to pay, 50% or something like that. The other issue that is masked in the data that we have looked at, and it means that our estimates are, if anything, pretty conservative of the decline that we've seen, is that there's been a big shift in the amount of your health care that you have to pay out of pocket. You know, so your co-pays and the deductibles you have are much bigger now in general than they were 25 years ago if you had coverage. I mean,
so we have two ways that people are having to pay. They have to pay a bigger part of their premium.
That's right.
And they have to pay the additional, all of these co-pay stuff.
Exactly. And I would add one a third thing, which we don't cover at all, but which I think is important. You know, if you remember back to one of the reasons why we don't have the national health insurance system that was proposed at the beginning of the Clinton administration is because the opponents to that were arguing that it was going to restrict our choice of doctors and things like that. Well, everybody who does have a health insurance program now knows that the private sector is doing exactly that. If you're in an HMO, you can only go to this limited list of doctors. You can't get a referral to a specialist without going through a bunch of rigmarole.
Referrals,
we've had a lot of that restriction and choice imposed on us anyway, and that's also not captured in the data.
Referrals didn't even happen. We didn't even have such a thing as a referral before we had that discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have to have that.
Exactly. You went to your doctor, and your doctor did what was right for you and sent you to the doctor they thought was appropriate for whatever condition you had, and we clearly don't have that anymore. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't have national health insurance either. So we don't have choice, and we don't have comprehensive health insurance. So, you know, it's really a big disappointment.
So in terms of the health insurance, that's what you looked at for your report.
That's right.
And the pension component of that.
Well, the pension story is also equally, you know, disappointing in terms of some of the ways that pensions have changed. I mean, if you look at the raw numbers, the share of workers who have some sort of a pension plan, it fell a little in the 1980s. It actually fell a fair amount in the 1980s. Then it picked up again in the 1990s, and we're back more or less where we were. But the big difference that's taken place is if you had a pension at the end of the 1970s, it was likely to be what's called a defined benefit pension plan. That's the kind of plan where I retire at the age of 65, and I'm given, you know, a pension that's equal to, say, 70% of whatever my final salary was, or 50%, or some defined amount of benefit that I know I'm going to get each month. And now what's happened in the 90s is there's been a huge shift to what's called defined contribution plans. That's the ones that probably most people these days have, defined contribution plans where you and your employer put some money in a fund, and then you cross your fingers and you hope that when you retire you have enough money to live off of that. And there's a lot more risk associated with that for workers than was the case in the past. So even again, as I said, the numbers that we're looking at just count either of those two kinds of plans as a pension plan. But the real mix has been a shift towards lower quality pension plans, and unfortunately we can't quite capture that in the data that we looked at.
So we're really not making comparison to comparison.
We're making the best comparison that we can make, but we have to keep in mind that comparison masks some important differences, and we just have to bring them forward and say, yeah, we have about the same pension coverage, but it's not as good.
But
we have less health insurance coverage now than we did, and it's clearly not as good.
And we also have the instability factor to factor into the pension component, because I don't think that anybody that retired in 1979 thought for one second that they wouldn't have their pension for till they died.
Exactly.
People that are in these days, they don't know if they're going to have their pension next month, no matter what they put into it.
There's a crisis in the private pension plan system that we have in this country, and you know, it's ironic because the politicians have been spending a lot of time talking about the Social Security system, which is in actually fantastically good shape for the next 40 or 50 years, and even after that would, under the worst predictions, be able to continue to pay benefits that are higher than what we receive now. And then, you know, so they make a big deal about that and say we have to act now or the system's in crisis. And you look around at the private pension system, and that's the one that's in crisis. People who do have defined benefit plans that are provided by their employers are very unclear and very uncertain about whether their employers are going to honor those obligations. And then the ones who have defined contribution plans that they set up themselves, they wonder, is the stock market going to wipe out everything that I have saved up, you know, from one year to the next?
And I was wondering this. I was driving down the highway wondering this. What about the instability that we have in the private funds, doesn't that maybe have a weight on the Social Security funds, because if you lose your pension, then you're going to have to rely upon Social Security, and you wouldn't have relied upon as much Social Security because your pension coming in would have taken you to a different income bracket, and you wouldn't have gotten as much Social Security.
Yeah, I think that that the key to the crisis in the private pension system now is it really underscores how important it is that we preserve Social Security and keep it as strong as it is, and defend it against people who want to whittle away what is there by shifting more and more of that guaranteed Social Security benefit into a much riskier private, you know, plan where you sort of roll the dice and see if you come up lucky in the stock market. You know, most people aren't, you know, financial economists. Most people aren't trade, you know, stockbrokers. I don't think that they want to assume a whole lot of extra responsibility in a very high-risk situation, you know, and I think the Social Security crisis has been kind of cooked up in order to get people to shift some of their money into the stock market and create some money for brokers and other people who are going to charge fees.
Mm. In your report, you also define what a bad job is. Talk to us about what the bad job is.
Well, just using the same definition, we defined a bad job as one that paid less than $16 an hour, had no health insurance, and had no pension plan. And it just turned out that the numbers were that about 25% of Americans are in that kind of a position. So that leaves about half of Americans in a situation where they might get paid more than $32,000, but they don't have health insurance, or they might get paid more than $16, but they don't have a pension plan, or they might have a pension plan, but they get paid less money than that. So basically, that bad job is one that gets paid less than the cutoff of $16 an hour, doesn't have health insurance, and doesn't have a pension.
So,
and you know, a fourth of us of Americans are working in that situation, and it's pretty appalling given how wealthy we are as a country.
And the trend between good jobs and bad jobs, what did your report find?
Well, the trend over time is it moves around with the business cycle. So when the economy is doing well, like it was the last 4 or 5 years of the 1990s, you see a big shift up in the share of good jobs. And you see a big share down, a big drop in the share of bad jobs. And it's very simple. I mean, it's the way, you know, economists like to talk about the way the market works, and that's a case where the market actually works for people, because there is a shortage of workers. Employers have to look hard to find good workers. They have to look hard to find any worker. So they start to provide, pay higher wages. They start to provide health insurance in a way that they didn't, or they provide a pension plan to attract employees and to retain their good employees. And there's a lot of other things that happened, improvements at the end of the 90s. There was improvements in child care, because if you wanted to get some women to be able to work who had kids, you had to be able to guarantee that their kids were going to be looked after and looked after well. So employers, you know, started to take actions that they would have otherwise never have done because they were pressed. And similarly, if you had a bad job, if you were offering bad jobs at the end of the 1990s as an employer, your workers would leave and they would go elsewhere. So they would find a better job that did pay more or had health insurance or whatever. So the trends are really dictated by two things: the way the economy moves over the business cycle. So when the economy is running well, workers' situations improve a lot. And when there's a recession, like we had at the beginning of the 2000s, you saw a big jump up in the bad jobs and a big decline in the good jobs.
One of the things your report also measured and took into account was job quality.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that?
Well, I mean, we tried to talk about quality as broadly as we could, but unfortunately it's hard to get at that with the data that we have. So job quality really would include a lot of things. How secure are you in your job? How safe are the working conditions at your job? What kind of flexibility does your boss give you if your kid gets sick? Do you have health insurance is one of the things there. You know, do you have a vacation is something that I think is important. You know, do you have paid vacation? Do you have paid sick leave? Unfortunately, we couldn't get at all of those dimensions with the data that we have available that over the period of time that we wanted to look at. So we did narrow it down just, unfortunately, to those three. I think they're important, but those three aspects of job quality that, that I mentioned at the beginning, just how much the job pays, whether it has health insurance or whether it has pension. It would have been great to look further and broader, but we weren't able to do that.
But when we talk about the education piece of this, do we find that there is a, even though quality is hard to measure, do we still find that there are some people that are educated better get better quality jobs, and people that are not educated get less quality jobs?
Yeah, that is definitely the case. I mean, if you have a 4-year college degree, your likelihood of being in a good job, as we define it, is much higher than if you only have a high school degree or you left high school without finishing your degree.
But I think everybody would understand that, and everybody would almost, you know, just assume that.
Right.
But when we make the comparison between 1979 and 2004, one would think then that if we're better educated today than we were in 1979, we're older, we're better workers,
right,
we're more education, then there would seems like there would be more quality jobs.
Exactly, and that's the great problem of that we're facing. What's interesting is if we divided the country, the workforce, into 12 groups based on what education level people had and what age range they were.
And could you hold
young
that?
People who had a college degree, and then slightly older people had a college degree, and then people who were close to retirement and had a college degree.
Could you hold that thought, please? Because
sure.
we have to take a break
now.
And we'll come back and we'll talk about this breakdown. We're talking to John Schmidt, economist with the Center for Economic Policy and Research, and we're talking about how good is the economy at creating good jobs. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake-Up Call. Stay with us.
Guy Gulman keeps you company after dark. Online at WGNU.net.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I had the knowledge and most importantly the discipline to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
Good morning, this is Liz Brown, and I just want to remind you that the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will take place on November 18th and 19th. On November 18th, we will be taking blankets at George Washington Carver House with our friends at Carver House. I wanted to remind you also that our meeting for all of the Wake Up Call Blanket Drive volunteers will take place this Saturday at 10 a.m. at 4919 North Union. You will get your T-shirts and you will also get your instructions for helping out on the big day. The Wake Up Call Blanket Drive Day, November 18th. So, volunteers, our meeting, 10 a.m. this Saturday at 4919 North Union. We need you there. Even if you haven't called in to sign up, that's okay. Come on down. You'll get your assignment. We need your help. We want this to be the biggest and the best blanket drive ever. So, this Saturday at 10 a.m. at 4919 North Union, join us. Volunteers for the second annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive in conjunction with George Washington Carver House. See you then.
The
Ever hear of the Restore?
Yeah, where is it?
3763 Forest Park Avenue, east of Annabenner, west of Spring.
What's in the Restore?
It's an eclectic mix of new and used building materials.
Like cabinets, stoves, hardware?
Absolutely. Everything from windows and doors to the kitchen sink, and then some.
And your purchases benefit Habitat for Humanity St. Louis, right?
Yes, they do.
I gotta check this out. When's the Restore open?
Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 4.
3763 Forest Park Avenue.
The Restore. Check it out.
Former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter will be our special guest on Mondays at 9 on November 14th. He was in Iraq as an inspector for 7 years and made it very clear before the invasion began that Iraq was not in possession of weapons of mass destruction and that trying to oust Saddam Hussein would be extremely dangerous. He's also on record as saying the president has betrayed the American people by building the Iraqi threat on lies, and he might stoop to any level to do most anything. An exclusive wake-up call interview with Scott Ritter, coming up on the November 14th edition of Mondays at 9. Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to John Schmidt, economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., and he's talking about his report, How Good is the Economy at Creating Good Jobs? John, welcome back.
Hi.
And you were saying...
Yeah, well, I think I was saying that I don't get out much because I'm an economist and I'm probably not as good at explaining these things as I should be. But I think the key to your question is how if you look at a particular kind of a worker who has a particular level of education and age now, how likely are they to have a good job as we defined it compared to back in 1979? So to give you an example... If you look at a worker who has a high school degree and is in the 35 to 54 age range, today about 20% of them have a good job. That is, they make more than $16 an hour, have health insurance, and have a pension. But if you look at that, a worker had the same age and the same education, high school, 35 to 54 years old, back in 1979, about 30%, almost 10 percentage points more, had what we defined as a good job. So for any given level of education and age, people are actually better off back in 1979 than they are now. The only thing that's different between today and back then is what we were talking about at the beginning. The workforce today is actually older, therefore more experienced, and much better educated now than it was back in the 70s. The economy is actually worse at creating good jobs. It's that the workers in the economy are a lot better off, a lot better qualified, a lot more skilled than they used to be.
And so where are these jobs? I mean, it doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't add up too well. I mean, you have to ask, well, where is the extra 60% of income going? As I was saying before, we have 60% more income per person today in the country on average than we did back then, but it's not being distributed on average. It's going, I think, to two groups. It's going to employers, especially big employers, who have much higher profits and much more income than they used to. And the second group that it's going to is very high-wage workers. You wouldn't think of them as wage workers, people like lawyers and doctors and MBAs who are, not the employers themselves and not the companies, but they're the high-paid workers in these kind of corporate settings. And those are the groups that have done phenomenally well over the last 25 years or so.
So it's going back into the pockets of businesses and going to the top end of the job. So the money is there.
Exactly.
The money is – okay. And my number here is 454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU. One of the things that you talk about also in your report is the share of good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Was this shocking to you when we look at the actuals from 79, the actuals from 2004, and the 1979 workforce? Was this shocking to you?
Yeah, it was. It's very surprising. I mean, you know, the way we're supposed to think about these things is if you do the right thing. You know, you go to school, you finish, you get a job, you work hard, you move up the ladder within your firm. You're supposed to do better. And what's true at that sort of, you know, micro level of each individual, you'd expect to be true at the national level. If everybody does that, then shouldn't we all be better off? And what's so surprising is to see a workforce now that is 60% more productive per hour of work, that has much more job experience, that has much higher levels of education than was the case in the past, to see that that workforce is absolutely no better off. They're in exactly the same situation as a workforce that they were 25 years ago. It's very disheartening. I mean, you know, we've made a huge national effort and to a certain degree sacrifice to get where we are. Most people, the vast majority of people, don't have anything to show for it.
And the idea that we have, that our economy, despite how well that it is doing, the capacity of it to generate the good jobs is really problematic.
Yeah.
And it should be a warning sign to everyone.
Yeah. We have an economy that has an enormous capacity to create income, but for some reason doesn't seem to have much of a capacity to generate good jobs from that extra income. And that's, I think, that's the fundamental problem. We have to ask, you know, why is that? Where have we gone wrong? What can we do to rectify that?
Let me get to a caller or two here. Carphone, you have a question for our guest.
Is that me, Liz?
Yes, it is.
Liz, I heard him say something about being surprised about the wages going up, but people being in the same position that they were in earlier years. I read this book back in 1970. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
In 1973, it talked about the wages going up and how they was going to manipulate things, but they was going to raise everything else to make people think that they were getting greater benefits. But at the end of the day, they would end up with the same situation. And that sounds like what he's talking about.
Thanks for your call. Do you think this was predicted, John?
Well, I think it sounds like the person who wrote that book back in 1973, they seem to have their finger on the pulse. I mean, certainly what's happened since then is predictable given the policies we followed. I mean, you have to ask, why has this happened? And I think why it's happened is because we've had a series of economic policies that have usually been presented as things that help to improve efficiency. But really the common thread of all of those policies is to lower the bargaining power of workers relative to their employers. Just think about it. We've had a big decline in the value of the minimum wage, the purchasing power of the minimum wage. We've had a huge decline in unions across the board. We've had a whole series of privatizations and deregulation of industries, privatization mostly at the state and local level, and lots of deregulation at the national level like airlines and trucking and telecommunications. And you look at those and a bunch of other policies that we followed, and yeah, maybe they have some efficiency improvements. I'm not convinced, but the thing that they do have in common is that they all make it harder for workers to have bargaining power, whether they're in a union or not, relative to their employers. Excuse me. And what that means is, you know, when you're in a weak bargaining position, you're not going to get a good job.
You're going to have to take what they give you.
Exactly.
Let me get to a car phone here. George, you have a question for our guest, John Schmidt.
Well, I'm looking at a World Almanac, a 2003 edition. Back in 1970, there was $265 per capita in circulation in currency in this country. As of 2002, it was $2,200, actually $2,238. So at the rate it's climbing, I mean, it's about 10 times today more money in circulation than there was back in 1970. And that's called inflation, right?
Okay. So your question is?
Well, the purchasing power has dropped so much. I mean, when I graduated in 66, I got a summer job for $3 an hour, which to make the same thing today, you'd have to be making about $17, $18 an hour with inflation. And that was a peon job. I was an electrician's helper. The electricians were making about $9 an hour. They'd be making 50-some dollars an hour by the same scale. So the purchasing power, you know, of the dollar has gone down because our government allows the Federal Reserve to print more money and put more money in circulation.
That's
one of the biggest problems we have, isn't it?
Thanks for your call and question.
Thank you.
John, can you speak to that?
Well, I mean, one point I should be clear about is that all of the information that I've talked about so far has adjusted for inflation. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about a $32,000 a year or $16 an hour job today and comparing that with the same kind of a job back in 1979, I'm adjusting the prices so that it take into consideration the inflation that's taken since then. I have a different take on the sort of the cause and the problems of this than maybe the caller does. I don't think that inflation is really the problem so much as I think that the efforts that the government has done to in an effort to what they would argue is to fight inflation. If you look at what happened at the end of the 1990s, which was a very good spell for U.S. workers, the Federal Reserve actually let the economy have a low unemployment rate. Even though many economists feared that that might kick off inflation and create problems, I mean, mostly for financial markets. And they allowed that to happen, and the economy got a low unemployment rate, and it stayed low for a long period of time. And I think that is what actually helped to improve the bargaining power of a lot of workers. Because when the unemployment rate is low, then you can easily find a job if you lose your job. And if you have a job already, you know that employers are out there looking for workers,
right,
and they're having trouble. So you can
right.
look around and you can leave your job if it's not very good and go somewhere and get a better job. So I think that there's been maybe an overemphasis in the U.S. economy on fighting inflation. And the result of that is that it keeps the unemployment rate too high. So I think what we need to do is fight the unemployment rate and make inflation a secondary issue rather than the other way around, which is the way we've done it for most of the last 25 years.
Another car phone. You have a question for our guest, John Schmidt.
Yes, I do. Number one, I really believe that the average American should watch how you are spending your dollar, because when you're buying an import product, a product that's made overseas, you're really putting yourself out of work. I think that the American people got to understand that your salary that you're receiving now has to come back to you, and it cannot when you're supporting businesses that are outside of your community or outside of this country. What do you think about that?
And I'm going to thank you for your call and your question. And, John, I'm going to ask you to hold that answer, please, because we have to take another break.
Okay.
Okay, I'm talking to John Schmidt, an economist with the Center for Economic Policy and Research. We'll get to your questions, your calls, when we get back. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake-Up Call. We are talking about the issue of jobs. We're talking about a report written, How Good is the Economy at Creating Good Jobs? So we're going to get back to more of that discussion after this break. Stay with us.
It is your sweet conversation that brings this sensation. Oh, no, yes, just an evidence of you.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNE.
How would you like to join the James Gang? It's easy to join. Just join me, Dennis James, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on the Party Line. Join the James Gang right here on WGNU, Radio Free St. Louis.
It's getting closer and closer. The second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive will be held on Friday, November 18th. Again this year, we're partnering with our friends at Carver House to provide the gift of warmth for those less fortunate. Liz Brown will be broadcasting live from Carver House, 3035 Bell Avenue, that morning from 7 to 10. And on Blanket Drive Day, your donations will be accepted at both the Congress and Senate building at 265 Union, the home of WGNU, and at Carver House, 3035 Bell. This is your chance to make a difference and change your little corner of the world. Be a part of the second annual WGNU Wake Up Call Blanket Drive on Friday, November 18th. By the way, we're now accepting your blanket donations here at the studios of WGNU Radio on Union.
This hour's edition of the World News Update can be heard in its entirety next Tuesday at this hour.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler, not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton. 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Did you know that the Defense Department has a program going to access the privacy of young people ages 16 to 25? This database will have personal information about 30 million people to determine if they might be candidates to join the military. Age, sex, do they own a phone, race, religion, and income are just some of the info on file. This is in direct violation of the Privacy Act established to limit the government's use of such information. We'll take a look at this controversial measure with Nancy Talanian, Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, Wednesday morning at 8 on The Wake Up Call. What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. My email is revolution@lizbrown.com. And, of course, the show is archived at whiterosesociety.org. If you missed an hour, shame on you. Go get an hour at whiterosesociety.org. And we're broadcast live on the World Wide Web from Xenia to Zimbabwe at www.wgnu.net. I am talking this morning to John Schmidt, an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. with his report, How Good is the Economy at Creating Good Jobs? John, on the way out, we had a caller ask the question of how much do our purchasing decisions of buying foreign-made goods impact on having good jobs here?
I think it has a big impact, and it's the issue of globalization, as people refer to it, I think is really one of the central questions here. I think globalization is part of that broader set of policies that I was talking about earlier that are typically sort of described as things that are going to help us be more efficient as an economy. But I think that the real purpose, underlying purpose, is that they undermine bargaining power of workers. I mean, think about the way we do globalization. It's almost invariably about pitting lower-wage or middle-wage workers against extremely low-wage workers in foreign countries. That can do nothing but make it more difficult for workers here in the short and medium term anyway from being under tremendous pressure for wage cuts and job losses. I think it's very hard to act as individuals. I mean, the caller is suggesting that we be careful about how we spend our money, and I think that makes a lot of sense. But I think it's much more sensible to have a coordinated national government policy that slows down the globalization process, that allows us to get whatever efficiency benefits there might be, but to have them happen in a way that doesn't displace huge amounts of workers all of a sudden. And I think it'd be great if we could do that by our own personal decisions. But I think it makes a lot more sense to do it, you know, in a political and as a community, stand together and say, look, these are the rules of the game if you want to trade and work with the United States, and we need to do that.
And it didn't happen. A couple of individuals decided that they were going to make some products over in China. That was a political act. There were laws that were changed. There were things that were done politically and collectively with those individuals to make it more difficult. I mean, even if you want to buy all American-made goods, you can go to some stores, they have Made in America and they're lying. Or you go to some stores and you can't find Made in America.
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. There were a whole set of national decisions, political decisions that we made, that we didn't make, that people claiming to act on our behalf made, treaties that were signed and agreements that were signed. And if you look at those agreements and you look at them, they're not really about free trade.
No,
they're really
not
about protecting investors that make decisions to invest overseas from having, you know, bad things happen to them. There's a lot of material in those free trade agreements that really don't have anything to do with trade and don't have anything to do with freedom. They're about restrictions on what people can and can't do. And the underlying message, I think, is if you are a low or middle-wage worker, you have to compete with the rest of the world. And that's incredibly unfair when the people doing the negotiations are not low and middle wage workers. They're the high wage people, and they're the employers that are doing all the negotiations.
And all you have to do is look at the last quarterly profit of ExxonMobil, and know that they made more profit in that quarter than any corporation in the history of this country has, and we're still paying the gas prices that we're paying.
I mean,
you just look at that in terms of the policies of that. Let me get to another caller or two. Greg, you have a question for our guest, John Schmidt. Yes, you have a question for our guest, John Schmidt.
Yes, sir. What about the outsourcing of white-collar and even professional jobs to India and China, plus the illegal immigration that keeps the blue-collar wages low? Thank you very much.
When you drafted your report, completed your report, were those factors, how were those factors put into your conclusions?
Well, I think they're another aspect of the general sort of deterioration that we've experienced in the economy over the last 25 years. You know, what has happened, particularly I think in the 90s and more recently, is that many workers in the middle of the income distribution that used to be somewhat shielded from direct competition with low-wage workers are suddenly finding themselves in the uncomfortable situation where their work is also now subject to competition directly, and I think outsourcing is a clear example of that, and I think it's a trend of the future, and it's something that it's getting tough now, but it's likely to be much more significant 5 or 10 years from now, and I think it's a huge challenge to the way we organize the economy. And I go back to what I said in the context of trade, which is, you know, we just need to be prepared to say, let's slow down this process. Let's do it at a pace that we're capable of integrating whatever efficiency advantages there might be with real concerns about the impact that it has on the people who are affected. If I lose my job because the economy is going to be more efficient and everybody's going to be made better off, I think that we as a society then owe me some compensation, because essentially if I've sacrificed my job for greater efficiency, then I should have something, you know, that I should be able to share in those benefits. And that's not what's happening in the way we've organized the economy now.
So the advocacy to individuals, given the fact that things are not better, there are not better jobs, we're not doing better than we were in 1979, despite that there's more money than there was in 1979, the advocacy to citizens.
Well, I think the key in terms of is to evaluate every sort of economic proposal that comes down the pike and say, what is the impact of this on the bargaining power that I'm going to have as a worker with respect to my employer? It seems like an odd thing, but I think that's actually the crux of the whole situation. So if you look at someone who says, oh, we can't increase the minimum wage, I think you need to say, one, we're so much richer now than we were back in the 1970s. Why is the minimum wage 30% lower if you adjust for inflation than it was back then? And the second thing you need to say is, gosh, Don't I want to be improving the bargaining power of workers at the bottom, which is what the minimum wage does. It basically says the whole community stands behind low-wage workers and says this is what you have to pay this person. And I think we need to do that with the globalization issue. And if they're not putting, if politicians aren't putting good options on the table, we have to say no until they come back with one that we like. So if they tell us, you know, Central America Free Trade Agreement up or down, I think we need to say down. NAFTA, you know, a whole host of things like that. We just need to reject and until they slow the process down and give us something that we can work with.
Where can people get a copy of your report, How Good is the Economy at Creating Good Jobs?
You can get it at our webpage, which is www.cepr.net, N-E-T.
John Schmidt, economist with the Center for Economic Policy and Research, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Until then, get your blankets and stay strong.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daniela Bellotta. Samuel Alito opposed Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court nominee, reportedly telling a college advisor he didn't agree with the landmark court ruling.
While writing his required senior thesis, Judge Alito became lifelong friends with his Princeton advisor.